gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the internet. Here in the basement of the Great Hall of Justice are the most powerful forces for good podcasting ever assembled. This is the DC Superpowers Podcast.
This looks like a job for Superman.
To the Batmobile.
My name is John Jones.
I am the Green Arrow.
Hey, super friends, welcome back to the DC Superpowers Podcast, issue number 110 for New Comic Book Day, July 18th, 2018. I don't know why I stumble on that, like, almost every week.
It's the July month,
number,
I think.
Yeah, the number's sitting right there in front of me the whole
it's
time.
It's a seven. It's, I don't know.
Well, welcome back. I am one of your hosts, Ken Rose, and sitting along with me here in the basement of the Hall of Justice is my good buddy, Vern.
Hello, everybody.
Vern, how you doing this week, man?
Good, good, good. We got a lot of stuff to talk about from Comic-Con.
Oh,
we
yeah.
We got some new posters and movies.
There's
and
actually
stuff
some stuff
like
that's
that.
Been released out before Comic-Con that I'm surprised. I didn't expect them to put as much stuff out before Comic-Con as what we're getting.
Oh, I was hoping so. Like I said, Marvel's not going to be there, so...
Well, yeah.
We're going to have to really back up everything.
Oh, yeah. DC's filling the void. And a lot of other people are filling the void, too, because the Hall H panels are... Warner Brothers has one panel on Hall H, I believe, and that's it. But we will be. Anybody who's watching the Facebook Live video can see I have lots and lots of paper.
Notes. A lot of
and
notes.
And all the paper is the panels, the DC Comics panels from Comic-Con. We will be going over that later. We will also be talking about the DC Universe Experience that's coming to downtown San Diego right across the street from the Comic-Con, which is awesome, and I wish they would do travel this show.
Yeah, I wish, because we could see them maybe in Cleveland, and we would take that.
Yeah. So, but before we get into all of that...
Yes.
We did get some actual news, like we said. Let's start off in TV. And we actually have some character breakdowns of new characters for Arrow Season 7.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is quite interesting, even though it doesn't quite fit who we think it might be. You never
There's
know.
A shot, maybe?
Exactly. Well, we have that hashtag show actually got the breakdowns for three different characters coming for Arrow for Season 7. The first two are 30 to 40s, intimidating male named Dover, and a 30-something female mercenary named Leah, which could be anybody. These are probably brand-new characters.
Mm-hmm.
But the other one is possibly... Now, we know Batwoman is coming.
Right, and we also have some crossover stuff of talking about maybe Blue Beetle might be coming, too.
Yes. Well... This one is mainly, it sounds like it could possibly be a Batwoman, even though the size is a little bit different. And the idea is that Batwoman may actually have a larger part in the Arrow side of the universe than anything else. She may be in the crossover and still be in Arrow for the rest of the season.
That's
what
I was
on.
Wondering. The way fans have been in hype about this, I'm like, the way it sounds, it seems like they'll keep her on the show for a little bit longer than just the crossover.
Yeah. Well, you got to remember, the first crossover they did, really... was when Barry guest starred on Arrow before they even had a Flash show.
Right, and then from there we've seen what happened. And then it happened also with the Legends.
Mm-hmm.
So, and now so, we also got the Ray. It's not a main show yet, but it is a... And Vixen.
Yeah.
Ray and Vixen. So the anime series.
We got some stuff. Well, this third character breakdown is actually for a character known as Angelina. And Angelina is described as a diverse woman in her 30s with a fierce fighter despite her small stature. Angelina is experienced in stealth and able to, quote, wipe out buildings filled with foes all by herself before she is gone like a ghost.
Sounds
that
like
sound
that
familiar?
One. That really does sound like Batman. Sound like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Angeline thinks very highly of her abilities and will be recurring presence in Arrow Season 7. Now, this doesn't quite fit Batwoman exactly because usually Batwoman is put about the same height as Batman in a similar build, I mean,
right.
Because of what she does.
Unless they
want to
go a
military.
Different way from this.
Yeah. But the whole being able to clear out an entire building by herself, that's a bat trait.
Right.
So is disappearing like a ghost.
Not going to lie, I was for a second like, are they going to do Silencer?
I don't know. No, I don't think they're going to put Silencer in yet.
I don't think so, but I'm hearing that. I'm like, that sounds like Silencer, too.
So we know that she is coming to the Arrowverse. We don't know when, like I said.
Right.
But the Arrow Season 7 panel is happening Saturday at Comic-Con, so you never know. They may actually make an announcement there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's going to be so much there.
Tonight is going to be dominated because Comic-Con is this week.
Mm-hmm.
As of recording, this show should drop Tuesday, the day before Wednesday night preview night at Comic-Con.
So you guys will have us to listen to give you a little bit of feedback, too, on what we think.
And the next couple of weeks are going to be full of what did we actually see at Comic-Con.
Right.
Did we see what we thought we saw?
Did we see more than what we thought we were going to get?
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you want the next one?
If it will show up. This is, once again, we have a lot of stuff coming out of...
Oh, who fell down?
That was Aquaman that time, actually.
Wow.
Hmm.
He took a dive.
This is more news about Doom Patrol. The CW was something we discussed first because, well, of course, it's already established. But we got a lot of stuff to keep coming out of this new DC's Nation streaming app. Finally, we got a name for that.
No, DC Universe.
DC Nation
is the preview book that I have sitting out here.
That's why we're just talking about it. But for Doom Patrol, we have a cast finally for Elastigirl.
Now, Elastiwoman.
Elastiwoman. Or Elastigirl from the comic book series, as it says here.
Was it?
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's what I'm used to saying. this is what I'm used to even in a cartoon. But this is Rita Farr, an actress who gains the power of size after a chemical accident. The actress playing her will be April Brody. Brody? I never heard of her before. Now, this is a size-changing character, as we just talked about. And she is known for her role on Drop Dead Diva. I have heard that show, but I never watched it.
Yeah, I've never seen
that
show.
And Chelsea Grandma has been reportedly to been cast.
We know that's not right,
Patrol.
Though.
Yeah,
because we saw in the previews and stuff that I forget whose name is, but there's someone else that was actually cast as Dr. Calder.
But as we said before, Doom Patrol will be shooting in 2019.
Yeah, or it's going to debut in 2019. It should start filming
shooting
probably
by the end
in the fall.
Year. Yeah.
Yeah, sometime this fall it'll probably start shooting, and more than likely it'll probably start filming in Toronto, where they were filming Titans.
Mm-hmm. That's what they do with the Netflix series that they have on there.
I need to get my passport.
They go on. Dude, I've been to Canada, and that was like when I was 10.
Dawn from
11.
Geekwatch 1 actually grew up in Toronto, or just
really?
Outside Toronto. Yeah,
didn't know that.
She's from Toronto.
Oh, wow. It's not bad. They're really nice up there.
Mm-hmm.
and next here we have an
next up, we're into movie news, and Entertainment Weekly has actually revealed some plot details and a couple of pictures from Shazam. Now this came out this week because Entertainment Weekly actually has their Comic-Con preview issue came out this week, and it was full of all this type of stuff.
We did this with Aquaman too. We did this with Justice League.
So, what they have here is up to now the plot of Shazam, starring Zachary Levi as the title character and Asher Angel as Billy Batson, has been kept close to the chest by David F. Sandberg, the director. But EW actually got some details from that comic fans are going to be familiar. Now, this is quoted directly from EW. It says, in the film, Billy Batson is assigned to a new foster home where he befriends comic book fan Freddy.
Hey, Freddy Freeman.
Which we'll talk about that in a minute. But one day, Billy's subway ride is interrupted by a mysterious wizard who's been searching for ages to find the right successor to inherit his powers. He reveals the teen's been selected to gain an assorted abilities. All it takes is for Billy to say, Shazam.
Shazam.
Now, this is interesting. I want to know, one, we know Freddy's in this.
Right.
If he does become get the powers of Shazam also, is he going to, what's his name going to be?
You're
because
right.
In this, Shazam is Shazam, not Captain Marvel.
What did we find
So why
out?
Would he be Captain Marvel Jr.?
Let me take a look at this. Because this is what we taken from the original, or not the original, the New 52 run.
Yeah. Who was Freddy in the New 52?
He was still the same character, but I'm trying to think, what did they call him?
New 52 reboot.
Let's see here. Freddy Freeman. Let me go to Comic Vine. But yeah, he had long hair in the New 52, too. It was blonde, long hair. I didn't understand
the pictures
that.
They have, one of them is actually Zachary Levi holding a 12-pack of cola, standing beside Freddy, who's got his crutches, and they're both chugging a cola, but Levi in the Shazam costume, he is looking ripped.
Yeah, and I know that some of that was a little bit of a suit for him, but it's going
to
fit.
Some, but not a lot.
They
did the same. Something to fill that out.
Right. They did the same with Ben Affleck. So think about how bulky he was.
Yeah.
Zachary Levi's also had to put in some work to do the same thing. Now, let me see here. Captain Marvel Jr. They might have actually kept him as Captain Marvel Jr. outside. 52. Tales of Shazam. Where's the New 52?
I don't know. Well, the other picture I saw, let me see.
Ah, if, here it is.
Okay, what you got?
Things the same.
This is a great podcasting, man.
It is great. This is us on the spot. Yeah, I think it was still called Captain Marvel Jr.
That's interesting because they're dropping the name Captain Marvel as much as they can.
Yeah, so I don't know.
So it'll be... no, excuse me. Hmm. There is a second picture out there. Let me see if I can find it real quick so we can describe that. But this one, they're sitting in front of the convenience store drinking. The only thing that is a little strange about the costume, which I can get past, that's fine, is it's. I think they've taken a page from Black Lightning on TV. And the lightning bolt on Captain Marvel's chest, it glows the whole time.
Yeah.
So it's almost, it's got, they've probably put LEDs and a battery in there, so it will glow.
And that's how it's lightning bolt. I don't mind it because, I don't know, it just gives off more of that superhero feel. But I don't know if it's always going to do that. It's just going to do it when he gets really
powered up,
I guess you could say.
Let's see. I'm going to try to bring up that other picture.
Another picture is basically, it's really showing off the lightning bolt. And is it,
Yeah, it's a darker. This one here is a lighter picture.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully, we're going to... Let me see where it didn't click the way I want it to. There we go.
Oh, they call him Shazam Jr.
They call it Shazam Jr.?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I mean, that's an option.
All right, then.
Here we go. Yeah, this is a better one. Actually, the other one is in the dark, and Freddy's kind of touching the chest of Captain Marvel, or Shazam, and as the lightning bolt is glowing. You can see, you know it's definitely glowing because you can see the reflection off of Zachary Levi's face.
And the shadow on Freddy's fingers, so...
Which really, since they're taking inspiration from the New 52, if you actually look at the New 52, the lightning bolt always looks like it has lightning in it.
Yeah, but they're using not the blue lightning, they're using yellow lightning from the original books. It's a basically a mashup of both, and I don't think he's going to have the hood in the new movie, but he did say he wanted to keep the cape short, just like...
No, they did say they... people have seen in the... in different...
The sightings.
Paparazzi pictures and stuff. Mm-hmm. They saw Zachary Levi in the hood. So we are going to get see him in a hood. We just it won't be always there. And you can see in one of these pictures. Yeah, I see here. This was a paparazzi picture of him, and it's got the hood down. You can see there's a hood there.
I wonder how much is he going to be wearing the hood, or is he going to show off those beautiful locks of hair for Captain Marvel?
I don't know.
The gods gave him.
There's no beautiful locks on Zachary Levi. It's pretty close cut.
Hey, he's a god, man. He's got beautiful locks.
Well, the next one is, as of today, Monday, July 16th, we actually got the first poster for Aquaman.
And he looks amazing. This is something that, I don't know how, I mean, people are still making jokes about it. They're comparing him from other Disney stuff. But Jason Momoa brings the real life, like, persona of Aquaman that we should be seeing.
Yeah.
He's not a joke character. This guy looks like he's willing to spear you with this along with the other sharks that
he
will
doesn't,
get you.
He's definitely not the traditional Aquaman.
No, he's not. I think that's why they had to stray away from it. I mean, even the comics right now, they're making Aquaman look more like Jason Momoa as they did with Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman.
A little bit, but like I said, he's not the traditional, but with the tattoos and stuff, he looks amazing. He's got the trident.
Hey. Boss Log, shout out to you. I love what you put on here on your Twitter. This latest poster Aquaman just dropped, and what I really happens here, like he just dropped a mixtape, and it's going to be fire under the sea.
Well, it has him, it has Aquaman crouched down on a pile of, looks like coral or something.
Deep under the sea.
And on the bottom of the ocean, surrounded by killer whales and sharks and some dolphins. Basically,
and some stingrays.
Predators or aggressive animals from the ocean all swimming the same direction with them. And you can see Atlantis in the background.
Right.
So it is an awesome poster, and it has the tagline on it, Home is Calling.
So I was looking at some of these. Just fans reacting to this is awesome. So fans seem to be really happy with this. We're happy to see this. I can't wait for this movie to come out. There's also been some other pictures out there from Entertainment Weekly that we didn't touch on, I don't think, with him and his brother Orm. I looked at that picture a little closer. Aquaman's wearing, like, his traditional orange costume.
Yeah, well, I know he does have it in here.
And I didn't
just not all the
show
time.
That one up that close. So it's good to have a little callback to him.
So, and actually, I'm trying to bring up a picture here that I have on my hard drive so I can mess with Vern. Let's see here. It's there.
What you got for me?
It's one I think you've seen before, but that doesn't make it any less awesome.
I'm going to look up the Entertainment Weekly photo to make sure that I can say exactly.
Which one did you find?
Aquaman.
That's not it? I'll have to look it up later, because I'm not going to take a lot of time on here. Even though that's kind of what we do, but
it is what we do. But yes, this other one is the one with his ponytail. Jim Mole's hair pulled back in a ponytail, same as Orm's is.
There we go.
And he's Patrick Wilson that's playing his brother Orm, and you can see the goldish orange tint to Aquaman's.
But that's more like armor. That's not like his
traditional.
I think there has been leaked pictures of him in the orange scale shirt.
Right.
Without Unless that was just a promo thing.
Maybe it was, because I know there was a toy out there, too. Like,
come on.
But that's Aquaman. Like I said, we got a lot of different posters out there. It's going to be Entertainment Weekly. The poster's out all over social media. You guys can find it. So Aquaman's definitely going to make, I think, a good appearance. I'm just waiting for a trailer to get everyone hype. Believe that. Oh, my goodness.
It's still, Jason Momoa at this point still, for some reason, looks like Roman Reigns from WWE.
No, yeah, they look like they're brothers or
something. Yeah, they could be brothers.
Maybe they are long-lost twins that no one ever knew about. Also, in this new poster that we got out there, we see some Atlanteans, too.
In the poster itself? No, that's a different picture. Well,
not the poster of the movie, but different ones that's been popping up. They look really unique. I didn't think they were going to take this too big of a different way. I thought it might just be people under
water.
Well,
you got to think, the Atlanteans are mer people.
All right. I didn't know how far they were going to go with that for the movie, though.
Well, if you look in the comic books even, the Atlanteans are not all...
They don't all look like
humans. Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy they're going deep on this. James Wan has a great imagination, too, expand it as far as you can.
So far, I'm impressed with what I've seen.
Oh, yeah.
So hopefully Warner Brothers lets him make the movie we're wanting to see.
And next we got here is...
this one's one that we're going to keep reporting on this, even though we're not happy about it, but that's fine.
Yeah.
It could turn out great.
It could, you know, but just right now.
Joaquin Phoenix is actually talking about the new Joker movie that he's supposed to be in, the Joker origin movie.
Joaquin Phoenix was sitting down with the director, film director Tom Phoenix and producer Mark Ruskasi has officially developed this actor and opening up about his choice of the role, saying that the film won't be like any other DC comic film fans have seen. And from this, I can totally understand why. I would have quietly classified this as an easy any genre. I would say it's a superhero movie or a studio film movie or a feels unique, and I think they're more like anything. Probably most important thing is Todd seems very passionate about it, very giving and so exciting. Phoenix told Collider, I think underneath the excitement of the film and the size of them, there are things, incredible characters and dealing with real life struggles, and sometimes that is uncovered and exposed and sometimes it isn't. And also, I so felt like there were characters in the comics that were really interesting and deserved opportunity to be this kind of studied. And I so think that what Todd sees appearing about this idea. Basically, from all that, what he was saying was when he first read the script, it could have been a comic movie, it could have been a drama, it could have been a crime movie, it could have been literally
really
anything.
He said this doesn't fit in any traditional category, which Joker shouldn't.
No, he shouldn't. If you're going to go about
also,
it this way.
I don't know if I'm... like the idea of Joker having a definitive origin.
I still don't either. I heard some people coming up with these theories since it's going to be more of the gangster, as me and you were discussing before we recorded, the closest gangster. I'm sorry, I'm not doing that Suicide Squad, Jared Leto. I liked you, but not that gangster persona. The best gangster persona of Joker I've seen was with Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, he was, well, see, and yeah, that was more of a mob gangster, the classic
mob gangster. That's how it should be.
Which is what we're going to probably get this, because
exactly.
Scorsese's really known for that type of movie. A Scarface or Godfather type gangster.
Yeah. That's what I'm seeing from reading this. Just for some reason, just the details of this, it doesn't seem like any other superhero film. Also, there was some stuff going around, people speculating maybe this will kind of tie in back to what we saw in 88 or 89 Batman film when Joker was the one that killed Thomas Wayne, because there's also been news reporting Thomas Wayne will be a role in this movie.
Actually, Joker had an origin in that one.
Yes, he did.
Because he was Jack Napier.
Mm-hmm.
In the comics, he's not.
Right.
But, so this could actually work. They've also seen the rumors that Thomas Wayne is supposed to be in this movie.
Yeah, so who knows? The only one thing I have a question about, too, is Thomas Wayne going to be just a big figure in Gotham City, or are they going to go dive deep into his Doctor origins, too? Because I feel like that's something they never really showed in the movies.
In a lot of the backstory of Batman, is it?
Well, they
Thomas
did a little
Wayne
bit
actually,
in the Batman Begins
dealt with
movie.
The mobs a little bit, didn't he?
See,
depending
it's weird.
On who you're listening to.
Yeah, who you're listening to, because on the new video game they made, he was. If you watch the new Gotham show, he was. Yeah.
Or even Batman Creature of the Night, it had a lot to do with that, because it ties in with Arkham, I believe, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I can see why people go off that idea, because it's like, how are you going to be this rich and prominent figure of Gotham City and not get in trouble or killed or anything, and be safe and protected with this big stature, and still not have some type of dark ties to you. This is why you're not getting hit up every night and getting your house robbed. I don't know. We'll see. I'm interested in this movie a little bit more from hearing this. And the reason why I'm more interested, the only reason I don't think they should make this movie, I was saying, we already had a Joker, like, 3 years ago. Now we're having a new Joker, and I'm just like, that's too much Joker in this short of a time frame.
Well, that's the problem a lot of people are having, is I've heard that from many, many places, that they're tired of Joker almost at this point, because it appears that Warner Brothers Studios, if they need a Joker or a villain,
they go straight.
They go to Joker every time.
Every freaking time.
So it's like, you gotta remember the original Batman, the first Batman live action movie we got on TV, other than the Batman 66, was Batman versus Joker.
Right. And how many years ago was that?
We get to the Dark Knight movies, and you get more Joker.
Yeah.
The Birds of Prey TV series.
You got
Joker was in the beginning of it because that's what supposedly caused the bat to leave.
Right.
And all these other, it's like everything's Joker, Joker, Joker.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I think they've done phenomenal with the new the Rebirth run, or since Rebirth, is they've used Joker very sparingly. We've seen him in four comics in the last 2 years. We saw him in...
I say a little bit more than that now,
not much,
but
because
it was just been very little. It's been very, very little.
No, he wasn't in the Button storyline.
He was in
he was
the Rebirth.
In Doomsday Clock.
He's in Doomsday Clock.
He was in Rebirth, kind of. He was a little bit. And he was in...
The Dark Knight's Metal.
Dark Knight's Metal.
And now he just came back for the wedding.
And then he was the two issues before the wedding.
And Justice League.
That's it.
That's fine.
And Justice League, he's in.
But this is all in the past month, because we've been waiting for about 2 years to see Joker. So in that first year, I think we only saw him once. And I was in that Rebirth.
And we weren't even sure if that was the
really
actual Joker.
Because there's three of them. So, yeah, DC Comics have been doing well. I think they know that because they're the ones that make the books for the movies. They know fans are like, we're getting Joker so much. Can we have just give us a little break. Give us a little break.
Well, we have more, actually, that was it for movie news, right?
Yeah, that was
it. We actually have some comic news before Comic-Con, which is interesting. Last Monday, Bleeding Cool actually got, that was something else. Forget it. But Bleeding Cool did run with this story. They found out that DC is actually launching a new title. They're bringing back the Freedom Fighters.
Yes, and we've been talking about the Freedom Fighters, if you heard us, about a year ago because of the show
Freedom Fighters, the Ray. Which we will have more news about that from Comic-Con.
Now, the Ray was a part of the original Freedom Fighters. And what year did these guys...
Yeah, originally they appeared in Justice League of America in 1973, created by Len Wein, which was the creator of Swamp Thing also, and Dick Dillon. The Freedom Fighters, they were a superhero team that gathered up characters from the 1940s that were actually published by Quality Comics, but then were later acquired by DC. And they were originally Black Condor, Doll Man, the Human Bomb, Ray, Phantom Lady, and Uncle Sam. Now, they had an ongoing series of Freedom Fighters number 1 started in 1976. That was written by Jerry Conway and Martin Pasco and drawn by Rick Estrada. Now, they obviously had stuff and they were in the universe until we got to the Crisis on Infinite Earths in the mid-80s. And that brought the characters into the full-on DC universe, because they were running on their own until then. And they were actually brought in as part of the All-Star Squadron, but Human Bomb, Black Condor, and Phantom Lady were later killed in Infinite Crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Now, new versions of the characters joined a new team of for Uncle Sam and the Freedom Fighters in 2006, done by Grant Morrison, Jimmy Palmiotti, and Justin Gray.
Right. And that's the one I was that's what introduced me to the Freedom Fighters when I was younger. Fun fact here, if anyone knows from Silk Spectre and the Watchmen.
Yeah.
She was created from Phantom Lady. That's where I got the idea, because as I said before, you had people like The Question for Rorschach, a little bit of Batman mixed in there. Owlman was a little bit of Batman. So just something like that was a little quick knowledge for you guys.
No, wait, where did the... I clicked off the page for a second. But now we know that this is coming. It says actually after the New 52, the characters from the Freedom Squadron, or Freedom Fighters, were sidelined into an alternate world again as part of the Multiversity on Earth 10.
Let me see the new one. Oh, yeah, this is the one I was... This is it right here. Oh, that's a small one.
Okay.
But this is the one I was growing up on, and it was a lot of different characters. At least they look completely different from what the original ones did look like. And that was Freedom Fighters issue number 8.
Okay, well, that we know that's coming, and probably this week later on during one of the DC panels, they'll actually announce this again, or they'll make the official announcement on this.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, the Freedom Fighters, the Freedom Fighters new book is not the only surprise news we got before Comic-Con. And I heard about this actually on DC All Access last week when they interviewed with Dan DiDio. It's the first place I heard about this. But Wonder Woman has a new writing team coming. Now, let's see here.
That's something that I completely didn't even see. Yeah. It went right
over
my head.
Well, according to the editor Chris Conroy, who's actually edited Wonder Woman since Rebirth started, he's tweeted and officially announced that G. Willow Wilson and Kerry Nord are the new creative team for Wonder Woman. Now, and that's actually all they had on this. They don't have anything, but I know G. Willow Wilson used to be, or was the writer on Wonder Woman at one point before.
Okay.
Did you look up any other information about her?
Nah, this was something that just hit me brand new. I was like,
there we
go. Didn't even know it. But
this
if we have this link right here.
The actual story for it here. Now,
yeah, I was going to say, they did say, if it loads up, Wonder Woman was ongoing with this in November 14th.
They're taking over on November 14th, Wonder Woman number 58.
Okay.
And it says, the first storyline, Just War, begins with Wonder Woman going to save Steve Trevor after his military unit came up missing in action while inside a war-torn Eastern European country. While investigating, Diana finds Ares.
Of course.
And then the quote here is, when Steve Trevor's unit goes missing in an Eastern European country torn by revolution, Wonder Woman immediately flies across the globe to help him, only to slam into the brick wall that is Ares, the god of war, who's taken a strange interest in this conflict. And this is actually straight from DC's description of this story arc. Now, but why is Ares acting so strange? Has he turned over a new leaf? Does Wonder Woman have a chance to redeem him? And just as important, if Ares has returned to Earth, then what happened to the supposedly unbreachable prison built to contain him? Wonder Woman's homeland of Themyscira. Now, Dan DiDio describes Wilson's hiring as an incredible opportunity for the publisher, saying that DC couldn't be more excited. Now, keeping our core audience engaged requires having the best storytellers around, and she's definitely a great addition to our current list of writing talent. Now, this is Wilson's first major DC work since signing an exclusive agreement with Marvel back in 2014.
Hmm.
The writer did, however, contribute to a story in 2016's Love is Love that was co-produced by DC and IDW. Wilson wrote for DC from 2007 to 2011 on titles like Superman, Vixen, The Outsiders, Air, and Cairo. Now, following this Wonder Woman announcement, Wilson assured fans of her Marvel work that she's not leaving Marvel still, and she still has irons in the fire. Now, like I said, the first announcement of this was actually done on the DC All Access app, or
the
YouTube channel. And Wilson actually had a quote here that, I'm delighted to be writing such an iconic character as Wonder Woman and to be working with DC once again. With more than 75 years of history, Wonder Woman has a wealth of backstory and drama to draw from. And I look forward to putting a spin on Diana and her supporting cast that's both new and yet familiar. It'll be a challenge to do her justice, but I like a challenge and can't wait to get started. Now, she is also scheduled to announce a new project with Dark Horse at Comic-Con later this week. So, looks like she's going to be pretty busy. But that's the Wonder Woman news. And we have one more news story before we get into Comic-Con.
Oh, boy, this one is deep. Not deep, but we're getting some more fun stuff, and it's going a little deeper. Some of this crossovers I wouldn't have thought.
These have always been amazing.
DC has more Hanna-Barbera crossovers coming later this year. This will be popping up at the end of the year of October on, actually. Was it the 31st, actually, they say?
Yeah, they said October 31st, Halloween Day.
It's kind of weird for a spooky comic. But we have first one being Mark Russell's teaming up with artist Rick Leonardi for Green Lantern Huckleberry Hound number 1. Which surrounds the Remnants of the writer's unique blend of history and the Hanna-Barbera characters' exit stage left, Snagglepuss Chronicles.
Yeah, this was which the, came out earlier the this same year. One who wrote Exit Stage Left, which means this may actually be
Huckleberry Hound Jr.
The Huckleberry Hound Jr. from the Exit Stage Left.
And here it says the Green Lantern Huckleberry Hound mashup will be during the events of Vietnam War as veteran John Stewart returns to the United States and has become a member of the Green Lantern Corps. Meanwhile, Huckleberry Hound has been making vocal statements against the war, and the public has turned on him. When Huckleberry finds himself caught up in the civil rights movement in Mississippi, Stewart also arrives on the scene, and things get complicated. See, that's what I was wondering. I'm like, they're not saying Huckleberry Hound Jr., but they might just let him just have that name.
No, yeah, he just has he uses the full name, Huckleberry Hound. Sam Basri does the covers, and the variant cover is going to be done by Yasmin Putri.
And this next one this is really a big twist, actually. Yeah. And a new twist to Yogi Bear mythos, there is a spooky spirit bear who lives in Yellowstone Park, and he is no longer stealing picnic baskets.
No, you got to say it right. Picnic baskets.
He is no longer stealing picnic baskets. That was the best I can do. He is also...
You pronounce picnic right.
Picnic.
It's picnic.
Picnic. Picnic baskets. Hey, boo-boo. That's all I can get. He is also... He also now kidnapping campers. And the Rangers are forced to hire Deathstroke to take the bear down. So in Deathstroke, Yogi Bear issue number one, done by Frank Terry and Mark Texera.
Texera. And Yogi Bear looks real different in this.
Yogi looks like a crazed rabid bear with a green tie still.
Yeah.
I better see boo-boo in here. Tyler Kirkman does the cover, and variant cover is done by Paolo Pianta. Patalina. Next one is Superman. This is really an interesting one. Superman must deal with the dangers of super food in Superman Top Cat issue number one.
TC's been working with Superman.
Yeah, right? I would not
trust
all that.
Top Cat.
How many members were in that gang of cats?
He had four or five or six.
I feel like it was like seven or eight. But this is done by Dan Deal and Shane Davis. It appears as though there are a new villain who seems to be the sentient pile of kale. Top Cat and Superman must team up to stop this new threat, dubbed Kalian.
Kalian? Alien with a K on the front.
All right. Shane Davis did a cover with variant cover done by Emmanuel Lupicino.
There's one more left, so this is going to be another round of four one-shots.
I like this little number that they keep that four, keep it consistent. Finally, when Dick Grayson visits Hollywood to meet the movie's great...
A movie agent,
he discovers that there's an agent has been murdered, and most of the clues seem to be pointing to one agent, biggest client, Magilla Gorilla. And Nightwing, Magilla Gorilla number one, Heath Carson and Tom Gourmet have Dick's don on the superhero costume and team up with Magilla Gorilla to clear his name and track down the real killers. Some of these team-ups are really off. I would never expect these.
Yeah. But it's cool because they're pulling... Hanna-Barbera is rich with a wealth of characters.
They are. There's so many they can pick from. The Marcus Toe and does the cover, and a variant cover is done by John Boy Mayers.
I'm surprised they didn't save these for Comic-Con.
Seriously. Well, maybe they just were a little late getting to it because of scheduling issues, maybe. But all these will be... all four is actually coming out on October 31st. Cool.
Yeah. So that's all of our regular news. The rest is going to be previews.
Yes, and this is all
Comic-Con.
For Saturday.
Wait, is it Saturday? New Year.
Doesn't start. That's Wednesday. Starts on Wednesday.
Starts on Wednesday, July, what is it, 19th? Yes, Wednesday, July 19th, I believe.
Something like that. Wait. Something like that. We'll just keep it there. What date is that?
No, it's the 18th. Wednesday is the 18th. Comic-Con itself is actually
that's Michael's birthday.
The 19th through the 23rd. Is Comic-Con. Well, we're starting off. Now, what I'm going to do is just generally do a quick breeze through of the panels, of what panels is in and when. If you want to stop me, I'm not going to describe all the panels.
Okay.
I'm going to choose in through here. We will mention what all the panels are. Now, remember, any of Super Friends out there that are possibly actually going to Comic-Con, get a hold of us and let us know what you saw at the show. We're looking for con correspondents.
Mm-hmm.
And also, this is not DC news, but anybody who actually is at Comic-Con, if you can get a hold of a copy of the Star Wars Thrawn Alliance's Comic-Con exclusive cover, let me know. I'll pay it for it. I don't have a lot of extra cash, but I want that
book.
We'll
sell something.
So, and it's probably like $30. That's usually what a hardcover is.
Yeah.
So.
Or a little less.
If you
can get a
hold of a copy of that, that would be fantastic.
But brand new.
Well, we start Wednesday night, and really, DC doesn't have a panel, but Warner Brothers does. They're having a new show called Manifest, premiering on the preview night of Wednesday night. They're doing a panel that's going to show the premiere of Manifest. They're also going to have an advanced screening of next week's episode of The 100. But the DC part of this is they're actually going to have... the event will include a special world premiere brand new episodes from Season 2 of Freedom Fighters The Ray, which is going to be coming to the CW Seed, which probably, if they're going to premiering the first episode of it, or two, first two, then they're probably going to release The Ray sometime in August.
Okay. Late summer.
Now, this is on Wednesday night, July 18th. The panel is from 6 to 10 in Ballroom 20. So, but that's all the DC stuff from Thursday, or from Wednesday. Next is Thursday the 17th, and DC starts early. 10 a.m. on Thursday the 19th, we get the DC Collectibles panel. And this is the DC Collectibles crew, including Executive Creative Director Jim Fleischer and Academy Award-winning special makeup effects artist Rick Baker.
Okay.
Which Baker has done a lot of work on Star Wars, too.
Big name in the industry.
Several special guests discuss how they come up with so many great ideas and what's coming up from the maker of Awesome Collectibles. This is Thursday from 10 to 11 in Room 9. Next, we get this is one that's awesome every year. DC's done this multiple times. The DC Meet the Publishers panel.
Mm-hmm. Talk to the makers.
Dan DiDio and Jim Lee, which are the co-publishers of DC Comics, but this includes it includes DC Vertigo, Mad, DC Black Label, DC All New Age of Heroes, and much more. It's an up-close and personal panel that gives you unique access to the leaders of your favorite comic book line. Then we also have a spotlight on Jim Lee panel, which is going to basically Jim Lee talking about his 25-plus years in the comics industry. DC Jeff, that's at 12:45 in Room 6DE. Now, there's a lot of... Room 6DE is going to be the DC room for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Because after that, at 2 o'clock, we get DC Jeff Johns, which is
that's
where
gonna be a good
Jeff
one.
Johns going to... the superstar DC writer returns to San Diego for an all-access, in-depth discussion with publisher Dan DiDio. Here for this exclusive panel that will give you insight into how the world of DC's entertaining fans across all platforms. Now, a lot of these, actually, if you get a chance to go to Comic-Con, they'll have exclusives at the panel, too. The next one up room at 4:30. Room 60E is the Supergirl 1984 Warner Archive Collection Blu-ray basically release panel.
Yeah, so this is what we were talking about earlier from the DC universe. We're going to have it be able to be streamed, but if we're going to have it remastered like that on a streaming service, they'll probably put out a new DVD for it, too.
Well, this is the panel that's going to have Helen
or
Slater,
Blu-ray.
Who is Supergirl. Hang on a second.
Yep. Doing might still be good, though.
This actually has Helen Slater, who is Supergirl in this, has Mark McClure, who plays Jimmy Olsen, and it has Warner Archive Collection podcasters George Feldstein, Matt Patterson, and D.W. Ferranti, all looking at this Blu-ray set that's coming out. The moderator is going to be Gary Mariano, and there are going to be goodies for some lucky fans.
Maybe you can get your own Blu-ray.
Well, there's three more panels for Thursday, and they come out as the DC Art Academy, which DC is proud to be the home of some of the most talented artists working in comics today. Class is in session for an in-depth look into their creative processes and shaping some of your favorite DC characters and books. This is from 5 to 6 in Room 11 on Thursday night. Next up, we get a Sandman House of Whispers panel, and it's Nalo Hopkinson talks about the experience of writing the manuscript for one of the new books in Neil Gaiman's Sandman universe. That's from 5 to 6 also in Room 32 AB.
Now, that's going to be on the new label, right?
Yeah, that's going to be part... I believe that's actually got its own imprint.
Oh, okay.
As the Sandman universe. If not, it'll be with the new Vertigo. Oh, no, no, wait. Yeah, the Sandman, Sandman universe is going to be part of the Vertigo line still. And the last one for the day is How to Draw with Jim Lee.
Yeah, well, those are always fun.
Exactly.
Now, those are the ones I usually find. Actually, I'm probably going to pull up one and see if I can see a video from last year's.
Well, this is going to be basically him sitting down telling you how does he do this, how to get into drawing. And usually he's drawing during the panel, isn't
mm-hmm.
he? Which Talking I believe some drawing. Lucky fans at the panel usually get to take those drawings home.
Oh, nice. I'm not sure, I can only see them from here.
Well, the next one we get up to Friday. And Friday starts off 10 a.m. in room 6DE again with the Young Justice Outsiders special video presentation. So this is good. This is actually the only dedicated DC Universe panel.
Really?
It's time for the first look at one of the most highly anticipated shows of the year. And Young Justice Outsiders, the teen superheroes of the DC Universe, come of age in an animated world of superpowers, supervillains, and super secrets. This time, the team faces its greatest challenge yet as it takes on metahuman trafficking and the terrifying threat it creates for a society caught in the crossfire of a genetic arms race spanning the globe and the galaxy. The producers and members of the voice cast give you an inside look at what it means to be an outsider. This is actually put out by Warner Brothers Animation, and it is coming to the digital streaming service. Now, remember, this is July 20th at 10 a.m. in room 6DE. Next, we will get the DC Nation panel, which I believe, yes, this is Dan Didio hosting.
A lot of questions.
And it is from 11:15 to 12:15, and this is the panel they do every year that brings in all the writers saying what is going on in the books coming up as we're
And
going.
They always give you a little preview or a tease of what it is going to be, a little synopsis.
Now,
but
we do have Tom King, who's from Batman and Mr. Miracle, Joshua Williamson from Flash, Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor from Harley Quinn and Jetsons, and Mark Russell from Flintstones and Snagglepuss Chronicles talking and teasing upcoming stories. Now, this is a lot of times they'll have even more than that, these guys on here. So, but that's from 11:15 to 12:15. But at 12, you have the first screening of the Teen Titans Go to the Movies. So this is going to be in the Horton Grand.
We're going to review that if one of us go see it.
Oh, I'm going to see it, man.
Okay.
I got to go see this.
Take Jude to go see that.
Yeah.
Well, give us an excuse to also go.
This is going to be at the Horton Grand Theater. I believe you have to buy the ticket separate from Comic-Con. You probably have to have a Comic-Con badge,
yeah.
But you also have to buy
tickets to see a screening.
Next up will be a DC Superhero Girls special video presentation and Q&A from 12:30 to 1 o'clock to 1:30 in room 6DE. And this will have a lot of the... probably the voice talent and creators of the DC Superheroes Girls. And this is actually the presentation for the new Cartoon Network TV series they're doing. They're finally getting an actual main TV series. Next, we have Mattel's DC Comics Collectors Figures fan panel. And this is basically going to be talking about what's coming up from Mattel this season in DC Comics.
Good. Now that's something I would want to see. What toys can I get?
Next up, you get DC From Page to Screen, and it's... an impressive film slate and countless shows and series that are in production for DC right now. It's never been better time for a DC fan. Hear from the people behind the scenes who translate the stories from DC's comic books directly to the screen in this panel that shows how some of your favorite characters and stories come to life. This is from 1:45 to 2:45 in room 6DE. Lego is bringing the DC supervillains meet the talent behind the video game. So this is a video game panel talking about the creating the DC Supervillains video game.
That's something else I would like to see. We've been showing down All Access recently.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of clips from there, but now we can get to dive in a little bit more.
Exactly. Next up, we have the DC Batman Family panel. And this will have everybody from the Bat Family. You'll have... but this should also be the one that's talking about what's coming up for the for Batman. Then we get DC Comics Before... Now, this is the one that really had me interested, because this is awesome. DC Comics Before Superman, the pulp comics of Malcolm Wheeler Nicholson. This panel will kick off the premiere at Comic-Con of Hermes Press's new in-depth book by Nikki Wheeler Nelson, which is the granddaughter of the creator of National Periodicals, which is the original name for DC Comics.
Okay. Fantastic throwback.
It explores Malcolm Wheeler Nicholson's creation of one of the greatest line of comic books. One of the greatest line of comic books. The panel will begin with a video presentation focusing on the art, artists, and writers of national periodicals while Wheeler Nelson was publisher and owner of the company. The panel features Nikki Wheeler Nelson, who will talk about these early influential comics. She is joined by Daniel Herman, who is the publisher of Hermes Press, and also from Silver Age, the second generation of comic artists. Michael Uslan, executive producer of Justice League and the Batman films. Trina Robbins, from Pretty in Ink, North American women cartoonists. Babes in Arms, women of in the comics during the World War II. And David Armstrong, who's co-producer of the animated pilot, Frank Cho's Liberty Meadows, to talk about the major, talk about the art, artists, and writers who laid the groundwork for the superhero revolution in comic books. So this is going to be talking about basically the setup, because this was all before superheroes existed, and what was in comics at that time.
Not what we know today.
Exactly.
There wasn't really a standard back then.
Mm-hmm. Well, next up we get that's from 4 to 5 in room 32AB. DC Justice League panel is Meet the Talents Behind, or the Talented Minds Behind DC's New Justice Movement, as they share their inspiration behind the favorite DC heroes. Scott Snyder, Adam Glass, Joshua Williamson, James Tynion IV, Bernard Chang, and Liam Sharp have a lot to share about your favorite characters and their fight for justice. This is from 4:15 to 5:15 in room 6DE. Next, we get from 5 to 6 in room 9, you get DC for Young Readers. And this is going to be basically the panel that's going to tell you all about the DC Superhero Girls graphic novels, DC Inc. and DC Zoom, which we've talked about on here before, coming in the fall. Now, top talent, Art Balthazar and Franco, Agnes Grabowska, Monica Kubina, and David... Oh, wow. Or Dustin Nguyen-Giv?
Nguyen-Giv.
Yeah, I think...
Now,
if I mess that up, Dustin, you can come on the show anytime. You have a note, and let us know how to say it right. Talk to us about the books. But they give you a glimpse into their projects and spill secrets on things to come. Then after that, at 6 o'clock in room 23ABC, we get the DC Vertigo panel. And this is going to tell you all about the brand new DC Vertigo that's getting ready to relaunch. Meet the new voices behind DC Vertigo comics, focusing on modern high concept stories for fans of fantasy, crime, supernatural, horror, and satire. Now home to the best talent from novels, games, comic books, and more. This next generation will take the beloved imprint to new heights, beginning with the launch of the Sandman universe on August 8th. 2018. That's the first of the new Vertigo books. Next up is actually going to be the world premiere of The Death of Superman.
Now, that's something I've been waiting for all year, ever since I heard that, because we're going to get a better one from... Sorry, we're going to get a better one from the old one and what we got in live action.
Mm-hmm. And this is something they do every year at Comic-Con. DC Comics on Friday night premieres whatever their next animated film is.
Mm-hmm. Last year was... Wasn't it Batman Harley Quinn? If I'm correct,
I believe that was the one there. Yeah, that was the one they're premiering, because that was the next book to come out.
Or movie.
Well,
film,
anime, yeah, the next
feature. Anime feature.
Now, after the world premiere, now this goes from 7 till 9 in ballroom 20. It says, witness the film's world premiere, then stay for an entertaining panel featuring Jerry O'Connell as Superman, Rebecca Romijn as
Lois Lane,
Jason O'Mara as Batman, and Christopher Gorham as The Flash, along with filmmaking crew of co-producer Sam Liu, co-director Jake Castorina, screenwriter Peter J. Tomasi, and executive producer James Tucker, plus a few surprise panelists. The all-star cast for this movie also features Rainn Wilson as Lex Luthor, Rosario Dawson as Wonder Woman. Shamar Moore as Cyborg, Nathan Fillion playing Green Lantern, Hal Jordan.
He's back.
Matt Lanter as Aquaman, which is awesome. I like Matt Lanter was Well, one, he was in Timeless that was just on NBC, but he was the voice of Anakin Skywalker in the Clone Wars.
Ah, you know, he's from Ohio.
Yeah, he's from Maslin.
Okay, Maslin, all
right. Which is right around the corner from us. Cress Williams as John Henry Irons, which is, Cress Williams is Black Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
As John Henry Irons.
That makes sense, too, for his death of Superman.
Tokes Olagundoy as Cat Grant. Nyambi Nyambi as Martian Manhunter. What else? Rocky Carroll as Silas Stone.
Mm.
Patrick Fabian as Hank Henshaw.
Mm.
Max Middleman as Jimmy Olsen. And Charles Halford as Bibbo Bobowski.
He definitely should be, but there's no Flash.
No, the Flash was in there.
Okay, I missed that one.
The Flash was, where'd he go? Christopher Gorham.
Okay, Christopher Gorham. Right.
Now, this is, the movie is available on, for digital streaming on July 24th, next week. And you can get it on Blu-ray, and Blu-ray combo packs and such, on August 7th. Now, remember, this panel is from 7 to 9 in Ballroom 20. Now, it's awesome. Now, some of this is for the death of Superman. This isn't for the return. But this tells me that they are going to do the return correct if they are adding John Henry Irons in the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the original Superman or Death of Superman story, John Henry Irons is saved, or Superman saves his life during this battle, which causes him to decide to step up and become a hero to help after Superman's gone.
Same as he did for him. Someone else needs to be saved and step up to the plate.
Then that's also followed by an encore screening of the, just a screening of the movie from 9:30 till 11 in Ballroom 20 also. So that's right after this is done. So if you want to see it a second time, you can watch it there.
If I could go.
Oh, yeah. But that's the end of Friday. There's a couple other panels in there that, and there's stuff that I've not covered that had DC writers in it, but I wasn't covering that as much because we need to get through these, other panels that are on here. Now, Saturday is the big day.
There we go.
Because that's where all your entertainment stuff is at. They start off Saturday morning with DC My Secret Origin, which is, they say breaking up is hard to do, but breaking into comics is maybe tougher. Who was in a punk band? Who went to art school? Who was a DC intern for becoming a writer? Come by for an inside look at how some of DC's top-notch talent broke in, crafting the tales of your favorite DC superheroes. This is Saturday morning from 10 to 11 in Room 6DE.
Early in the morning. Wake up early, find out how you can get into this stuff.
Well, the next one is the big one, and there's really no description here. And it is from 10:30 to 12:30 in Hall H. Everybody knows that Hall H is the big panel room. And this is a two-hour panel. It is the Warner Brothers theatrical panel. This is the one where we're probably going to get... Well, we know it's been confirmed at this point 100%. We are getting an Aquaman trailer during this.
So we're probably going to see Jason Momoa and the crew step it.
Oh, yeah. They will probably come on to talk a little bit about Aquaman. We will probably... And the rumors are very, very, very strong, but they are rumors at the moment, of getting a Shazam trailer during this.
Mm-hmm.
At least a first look.
Yes.
Or what it would be, a teaser trailer.
Which I found there. I found the leaked trailer for it, a couple of clips. It was in a different language, but it is out there. It's out there. Okay. So hopefully we'll be able to see that one.
Because I'm going to wait until we get the official.
I couldn't help it. I typed in Shazam and that popped. I was like, I'm clicking on this.
Well, we got... we're probably going to get Zachary Levi and the rest of the crew from Shazam on that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're going to get something. Well, I know we will because they're filming now for Wonder Woman 1984.
Mm-hmm.
So Wonder Woman 2, we will get something from that. If it's photos, or we may get
a little teaser.
A first look. Not a tease, but an actual first look. But the rumor mill is going bananas because Henry Cavill has been talking about Superman a lot recently. We may actually get a Man of Steel 2 announcement.
And if we don't, I'm pretty sure he'll definitely be discussing some Shazam, because we know he's going to be in there, at least as Clark Kent.
Yeah, we don't know that for sure, but the rumors are Henry Cavill is in there, is
he
around
was on
somewhere.
Set.
Now, what's interesting is that's happening in Hall H, but from 10:30 till 12:30, but the Black Lightning panel goes from 11 to 11:45 in Ballroom 20, so it's during the same time. So I'm wondering if they're not going to start off with DC there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because the Black Lightning panel actually has, Cress Williams is going to be there. Let's see, Supercharge series stars. What's the panel going to have, though? Because, well, these ones, a lot of times, will bring almost the entire panel.
Right.
Or the entire crew. This is a description of the show.
They've been a little hush-hush about that.
They've not said who's going to be on it. Cress Williams will probably definitely be there. We'll definitely get Greg Berlanti and Salim Akil and Mara Brock Akil, who are the executive producers, and Sarah Schechter. They will probably all be there. We know Cress Williams will be there. He is Jefferson Pierce.
Right.
And probably the rest of the main cast will be here. But it doesn't say. So, next up, we get the World's Finest panel.
Uh-huh.
Some of DC's most brilliant creative minds have been gathered to give comic book fans insights into how they make the DC universe a nonstop e-ticket thrill ride in every issue. Drop into this panel and check out what they've got in store for you next for the world's greatest superheroes. And this is from 11:15 to 12:15 in room 60E. The next panel we have here is actually the Krypton panel.
And, okay, discussing the events that happened this season.
Yeah, we're talking about this season and then what's going on coming up.
And how many seasons maybe you could be expecting?
Yeah, well, no, they don't know until the season to season what's the next, when they're getting the next, or how they're going.
I just wonder how long have they went into thinking about the story.
Yeah. Well, it says the cast and creators of Sci-Fi's hit series discuss the many surprises in the first season and give an inside look into what fans expect for season two. Next up, we get and that's from 12 to 12:50 at the Indigo Ballroom in the Hilton San Diego Bayfront. Next up, we get DC's New Age of Heroes, which is going to be basically all the people talking about the, 8 new New Age of Heroes books.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah.
We had.
And that's from 12:30 to 1:30 in room 60E. After that, from 1:45 to 2:45 in the same room, 60E, we get DC Essentials. And this one is new to comics. Are you at the convention because you're a fan of the great DC TV, movies, video games, and other media? Binging a season of The Flash, leave you wanting to know more about the source's material? Well, look no further. This is the panel for you. A panel of experts is here to help you along your journey through the wonderful world of comics, from the back of your long boxes to the newest on the shelves at your local comic shop. So, and actually, DC Essentials has been around for a while, and it's basically a curated list by DC Comics of what do you actually need to know about DC to get into the books. And it's a list of different graphic novels that they see are the best ones out there or that fit into what we have right now.
I feel like we might even be getting on a streaming site.
Possibly. Yeah, that may be actually the list they're using for the streaming site.
That might be.
We'll find out. Next up, we get... now, that's from 1:45 to 2:45 in room 60E. Next up, we get a spotlight on Peter J. Tomasi, which is Peter discussing his 20-year editorial and writing career at DC Comics, along with a foray into creator-owned books and screenwriting. And there will be a Q&A afterwards, moderated by Peter J. Tomasi himself. This is from 3 to 4 in room 4. Next, we get the Supergirl panel, and that's going to be in Ballroom 20 again from 3:30 to 4:15. And this will have all of everybody you expect again, Greg Berlanti, the whole cast will probably be there. And that one will be followed at 4:15 by the Arrow panel. Same thing. All of your Arrow people, and they'll have I don't think they're actually filming anything for any of these yet. So we're not going to get any clips from the new season, but they will tease a lot about the new season.
And discussing what we might need to expect from there and get our hearts ready.
Well, the Arrow one, will hopefully discuss a little bit about...
some of these new characters that we heard about.
Well, Batwoman.
Oh, you know they are.
What are they going to do?
You know they
are.
That's been the whole hype of the new season.
Mm-hmm.
And then this next one looks like is Batman, the animated series, coming to Blu-ray.
This is the panel for the Blu-ray release of the Batman animated. And this is actually, we talked about this again last week. It's from 4:15 to 5:15 in room 60E, and it's talking about basically, more than likely, some of what went into updating the show to Blu-ray and what to expect from the Blu-ray set. Next is actually a panel called Wonder Woman in the 1940s, and it's from 4:30 to 5:30 in room 5AB, and everyone knows William Marston as the co-writer of Wonder Woman, but many of the classic Wonder Woman stories of the 40s were co-written or wholly written by his uncredited and previously unknown assistant, Joy Hamill. Her name is Joy Murchison Kelly, And she is this year's in-person recipient of the Bill Finger Award for Excellence in Comic Book Writing.
Interesting. Okay, I didn't know we were giving out awards for that.
In this special historic event, she makes her first appearance ever on a comic book convention panel, where she'll be interviewed by historians Trina Robbins and Mark Evanier. You don't want to miss what may be your one and only chance to hear her speak about writing the adventures of the Amazon Princess, helping create the mythology of Wonder Woman, and working with Dr. Marston's office alongside with him and Wonder Woman artist Peter G. Or Harry J. Peter. So this would be really cool because this is she was there at the beginning when Wonder Woman was created.
So she knows
and stuff.
Her stuff.
And it's rare to see someone. Well, there's very few from that time that are still around.
Here.
So then. From 5 to 5:45 in Ballroom 20, we get the Legends of Tomorrow panel, which will once again have the cast and crew and all the creators and stuff.
They'll probably discuss a little bit about Constantine's role, and I feel like Matt Ryan's going to get asked the most questions.
Oh, definitely. They're going to want to tease Constantine as much as possible. Next, we get DC Tom King, which is another panel basically just about the life and work of Tom King, which we know is he has been fantastic on Batman.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You know, that's going to be a lot of stuff coming up. If he's going to stay, how long is he planning on staying when he's coming back? And to be honest, probably whenever. And they ask him or whenever he wants at this point.
Well, this also, he'll probably talk. Well, it says here he's going to talk about his former life as a CIA operative. And also, they are going to talk about the new Heroes in Crisis.
Yes.
So, about that. This is in room 60E from 5:30 to 6:30 on Saturday. And then the last. DC panel for Saturday is the Flash panel. This is for the Flash TV show, and it will have basically everybody from the Flash and talk about the next season.
Hey, who's that new coffee shop girl?
Yeah.
We know who it is now, but I got a lot of questions for that if I was there.
Well, this is in Ballroom 20 from 5:45 to 6:30 on Saturday. And then there's only a couple of panels for Sunday, but Sunday morning starting at 10 a.m. in room 60, we'll get DC for All. DC has long been home of thrilling tales featuring the superheroes of the Justice League, but that's not all. Come and hear about the incredible imprints at DC, which include the provocative standalone stories in DC Black Label, the coming-of-age tales of DC Zoom and DC Inc., the weird and dangerous DC's Young Animal, and more. Listen to John Romita Jr. and other amazing creators behind these stories, and discover your next must-read book from 10 to 11 in room 6DE on Sunday morning. Next, we get a spotlight on Rafael Albuquerque, which he was the artist on All-Star Batman and many other books for DC right now. A lot of the stuff now, I forget what book he's on now. He's on one of the DC books now, too.
Okay.
And that's from 10 to 11 in room 24 ABC. Next, they had an art school on Friday night. Well, you get the DC Kids Sunday Art School. And this is a chance to bring your kids along as some of the best young adult / kids artists DC has to offer are here to share with you their drawing tips and tools for the trade. Fan favorites, Art Baltazar and Franco, Agnes Garbowska, Monica Kubina, and Tom Richmond are your tutors for today's class. This is from 11 till 12 in room 11. Next up is In Conversation with Joelle Jones. Now, in the past year alone, writer-artist Joelle Jones released two volumes of her hit creator-owned series, Lady Killer, and took on more dramatic new roles in her exclusive deal with DC Comics, including Supergirl being super and drawing Batman for Tom King during the Rebirth storyline that finds Bruce Wayne engaged to Selina Kyle.
But we're going to be going over
exactly
a little bit.
Well, this summer, Jones debuts her exciting new story that finds Bruce Wayne engaged. Or wait, exciting new take on Catwoman. So she's doing Catwoman and takes Selina to an all new city to face off against an all-new villain in an all-new costume. Jones talks with moderator Mike Russell about what it takes to build a new city. What it takes to build a new city and new foes for Catwoman. The conversation will touch on her writing and drawing processes, how she crafts a fight scene, and the high stakes of designing a new look and a wedding dress for Selina Kyle. The genesis of and future of Lady Killer, her creative obsessions, and much more. The session will also feature an in-depth breakdown of some of her most famous artwork, along with some exciting reveals of the look of Catwoman's future. This is from noon till 1 in room 24 ABC. Next up, there is another premiere. There's two more premieres for DC movies. We get the world premiere of the DC Superhero Girls Legend of Atlantis.
Yes, and that's the one we discussed a couple weeks ago.
Yes, and that is from 12:15 to 1:30 in room 6 BCF, and it will have, let's see. Yes, and it will be followed up by a panel with some of the creators and voice talents from the Superhero Girls. And then the last one we have here is the world premiere of the Lego DC Superheroes Aquaman Rage of Atlantis.
There we go.
Which is the latest Lego movie. And it will also, once again, be followed up by a panel of who's going to be, of all the people in it and that help make it.
Okay.
And that is the last panel we have here for DC. Now, that movie, Superhero Girls, is available August 21st on digital and September 18th on DVD. And the Rage of Atlantis is available, where'd it go? There, July 31st on Blu-ray combo and everything, all of that, and digital and everything. It's all the same day for that.
Okay, they usually do digital like a week or two ahead of time.
This is one that's weird that is actually coming out at the same time. It's from 1:45 to 3:30 in room 6 BCF. So actually, if you go to room 6 BCF to watch the Superhero Girls, you'll get, and you stay there, you'll get the Lego movie also.
Okay, I would stay definitely for a Lego movie.
And now that I can't speak anymore, that's all of the Comic-Con panels, but that's not all for Comic-Con.
That is not.
Because DC, or the DC Universe, is not doing a panel other than the Young Justice panel we talked about. But across the street from the San Diego Convention Center, in the Hilton San Diego Gaslamp Quarter, is going to be the DC Universe Experience.
Yes. Now, listen.
Now, if you go to DCUniverseExperience.com, you can pre-register for this because this is a first-come, first-serve event. Now, what were you saying?
No, I'm just saying, since it's going to be right across the street, it's not going to be too bad for you guys just to go there because you're still going to be in the area. Not everyone's going to stay exactly in there, and it's still going to be really packed. So forever can get in there, I say get to this one so you know what you're expecting.
Now, we have the actual press release. I believe this is free with your Comic-Con badge.
Yes.
Now, it's the DC Original Series, DC Classic Films and TV Series, and DC Comics take center stage at Massive Film Experience coming to Comic-Con International San Diego 2018. This is going to be all 4 days of Comic-Con from July 19th to the 22nd. You can pre-register at DCUniverseExperience.com. Now, DC Universe, a first-of-its-kind digital subscription service designed especially for DC fans, will come to life. All right, wait, I lost my second.
Will come to life over half a dozen immersive interactive expectations at Comic-Con International. Fans will have the opportunity to immerse themselves into the DC Universe for the first time, literally walking through the origin. Classics and comics soon to be available through the digital service. It's going to be open for, as you said, the 4 days from Thursday to Saturday in a large lifetime installation.
Well, it's a larger-than-life installation.
Yes. With priorities, we'll welcome fans.
Wait. It's a larger-than-life installation of epic proportions. We'll welcome fans into interactive spaces that bring iconic characters and stories to life. You can register, like we said, at DCUniverseExperience.com. After registering, fans will head over to the Hilton San Diego Gaslamp Quarter.
This is what I'm jealous about.
Directly across the street from the San Diego Convention Center. Guests of the activation will interact with dozens of activities and installations, including...
Jealous right now.
Explore Dick Grayson's Titan's Loft and uncover clues to his whereabouts. Experience the mysterious creations of Dr. Niles Calder in the Doom Patrol lab. Avoid succumbing to the deadly virus in the mystical swamps of Swamp Thing. Join Earth's newest superhero team in the Young Justice Watchtower. That's interesting that they have their own watchtower.
Yeah, well, now they do.
Well, create mayhem in the Harley Quinn Chaos Room.
You would like that one.
Oh, yeah. Well, step into the sewers with Batman and descend into madness in the Court of Owls.
My buddy would love that. He was all into the Court of Owls when they came out.
Well, enjoy the first public unveiling of rare artwork and memorabilia, only previously seen in exclusive engagements. Then we have discover hidden clues and get an exclusive first look at the DC Universe digital subscription service, and so much more. Now, signing up online in advance allows guests to streamline your on-site admission process. Pre-registration does not allow guests to reserve their spot or bypass the line, though. The activation will be open to first-come, first-served basis. So, but pre-register gets you through the registration stuff faster. So I'm sure they want you to fill out some paperwork before you go through this, probably sign some stuff. Now it says the important details of this. The dates of operation are Thursday through Sunday, July 19th through the 22nd. It will be running Thursday through Sunday from 9:30 a.m. till 7 p.m., but the line closes at 6 p.m. And Sunday, the hours are 9:30 a.m. till 5 p.m., and the line closes at 4. This is at the Hilton San Diego Gaslamp Quarter, 401 K Street, San Diego, California, 92101. And you have to go to DCUniverseExperience.com if you want to pre-register for this. Now, the rest of the information here is all actually about the DC Universe, which I don't think there's nothing new. We know it is coming in August, at least for beta.
Yeah.
And this is something I am extremely jealous about.
I want to tour. I want
to
tour, too. The thing is, I'm wondering, can people even have their phones with them like that?
I don't know.
Because, like, how many people are going to be streaming that if they could?
Yeah. Well, everybody's going to try to stream stuff out of there if they can. Mm-hmm. They'll at least take pictures if they can.
Yeah.
So, but we will find out because the DC Universe should be launching pretty quick after this. So they said sometime in August. So we don't know if that's going to be the beginning of August, end of August, the middle of August.
Oh, okay, here it is. Here it is. The DC Universe is coming to San Diego Comic-Con International San Diego.
Yeah, that's the pre-registration. What information do they want?
They want your first name, your last name, your email. When are you attending Comic-Con? Your country, phone number. Once again, after you fill all this in, you hit, I have accepted all this, and you continue, and I'm not going, so I'm not going to put in this information. I don't know where it takes you from there. But something very simple to fill out, very easy.
They want to basically know who you are and be able to send you information about this.
Yeah.
But I think that's all of our news and everything from Comic-Con that we know of so far.
For now. For now. So.
I'm tired.
Yeah, right?
Comic-Con but we have is more. Going to be huge.
Where?
But
do
yeah, since
we
we're done
go
that,
into we reviews?
To, yes, we have to review some books, and one that we've been looking forward to for months and months and months and months. And it wasn't personally, I don't think it was as good as the
hype was
the Batman, or it wasn't as good as the Superman Wedding album.
No,
but that was a totally different thing.
That
and this
happened.
We are going to put out spoilers for the wedding the Batman number 50, the wedding issue. You will get spoilers here. And there are surprises in this book if you've not read it yet or if you've not seen the spoilers. So read this book first and then come back and listen to us. Or just put us on pause, read the book, and come back.
Yep.
Or just allow us to spoil it. It's up to you.
It's up to you guys. But
so where are we starting here? Hey, Kite Man's getting love again.
Yes, he is. Well,
dude,
kind of getting
reason,
love. He's getting punched in the face type of love.
Tom King loves Kite Man. He's got to. As much as he puts Kite Man in his books.
Spring Kite Man came back now, and you see Batwoman and Batman, Catwoman, and fighting him on the roof. Of course, they're winning. This is something just to get them into what they're going to expect when they get married. And each page really is just a cover by different artists. Like this first one is Garcia Lopez and Monoval Hill. This is the cat. The next one's the bat by Cologne. As we continue with the story, we have someone in a bar here in Gotham.
Well, this whole book is basically full of what would be Batman Catwoman covers.
Cover page. Yeah, it's like variant covers.
Yeah, you get like two variant covers and then a page, then two pages of story.
Then you go to the next two
variant
covers, then two pages of story, and that's the whole book.
The variant covers ones
really
actually have
the artist's name at the bottom.
Well, they have the artist's name at the bottom of it, but it has like Batman and Catwoman talking to each other across the pictures.
Then we see this man and Jim at the bar. He sees Batman there, a mystery. Judge Wolfman, And then now we go back to Arkham.
That's
kind
of cool. But, Wolfman?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, by the way, not each page, but if you really break these names down.
They're who's who of DC writers and creators.
Yeah.
Now, this is starting off, like we said, that first page. Batman and Catwoman have decided they're going to get married tonight. Yep. They're not having a big ceremony somewhere. They're just like, we're going to get married. So they need a judge and two witnesses. Well, this is where Batman finds the judge. He's already getting drunk at the bar.
Yep. And then this is where we go back to Arkham Asylum, and someone breaks out Holly Robinson, which is Catwoman's Robin.
Yeah. So then we get another two-page of writers. One of them is the Frank Miller drawing.
Also, do you remember a couple months ago we read the Batman special, and it was Batman and Catwoman growing old together?
Yes.
Remember how they kept going back and forth saying, we met on a boat. No, yeah. We met in the street. I just figured out where that came from. I forget which writer did which one, but it was Batman Year One. That was like the reboot of how Batman came to be in Gotham City that we know him to be as now. They met on the streets. Mm-hmm. But on the original comic books when Batman and Catwoman first appeared, it was on a boat.
Yeah.
So it was just like them going back for like, which one did you meet? Because like the origin stories of them had two of it, and I just thought it was pretty cool. I didn't figure that out till last week.
Well, the conversation back and forth between Batman and Catwoman is that, like you said, it was where they met, things like that. And then Catwoman wondering things like, and it's also her telling the story of where they met on this section.
Yep.
The next two story pages, you get
Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
Yeah, Batman taking down one of the Tweedles and Catwoman taking down the other Tweedle in a different place.
Under Arkham Asylum for Catwoman and on off Robinson Boulevard for Batman. And, of course, they succeed. Then you get this other shot that I thought was pretty awesome. Now, I never heard this artist before. Bermejo?
Bermejo, yeah.
And then Adams and Hi-Fi. And they're both just these orange panels showing, look like Batman Gotham by gaslight.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the good old Batman and Catwoman from, like, the early 2000s, I would say.
And this one has the first page basically talking about Batman... How he trained to be a detective. He trained to be cold and calculating and to strike fear into villains until he met her.
Yep.
She was the one that got through. And then the Catwoman talks about how she reads people also, men, women. She has to. It's part of her idea.
Ability.
And it's part of her cat burglar skills. She has to actually read people to see what's going on. And the key to people is their eyes. You look there and you see the secret intention, but she looked into his eyes, and she saw the hero with the big blue eyes, and he was easy to work for, or to fall
work.
In love with.
Yeah. Well, at first to work, but easy to fall in love with. Uh-huh. She was trying to figure out which one does she want to do, and we see where we're at now.
In the next two-page panel...
You go to Wayne Manor, and this is the West Wing of Wayne Manor. Now, I don't know where they came from. Maybe this was somewhere under Gotham, or under Arkham,
well, they came through they came through the Batcave, probably.
Maybe. I was wondering if there was a secret compartment
to
Arkham City.
Well, there's
or Arkham City, I'm sorry.
Panels everywhere in Wayne Manor.
And this is when she puts a blindfold over Harley, Holly, so she doesn't see where they're from or where they're going to and how they got there. She opens this up and she says, is this your house? And she's like, Selina, this is your house. They're going to be her house. And now we go back to the Wayne Manor of East Wing. Both of this happened at the same time. Batman eating a sandwich, a classic sandwich, discussing with Alfred. Once again, he has Judge Wolfman to be there and have it for the wedding, and how he stole him from the bar drunk, and he said he would sign for this. And Alfred says,
yeah,
how romantic.
Keeping him drunk so that he doesn't realize who it is he's actually marrying.
And Alfred, how romantic. he says, what about your location? He's too drunk to understand that, plus he's on the rooftop anyway, so he'll just be up there passed out probably soon. Then we get this other one when Batman was actually not in the Batmobile with Catwoman and as a passenger. It's on Catwoman's motorcycle, and Batman is the passenger, and talking about back in the day, the sparks of blue and yellow on him, and then the purple and black on her, the purple flames, the orange from her bike, just fell in love with the colors of each other. Then, once again, we get them having a picnic in the zoo.
In the tiger enclosure.
And this is Batman, once again, eating a sandwich with champagne as Catwoman with the tiger surrounded. Mm-hmm. But don't worry, he's a little freaked out. But it was really romantic because she can control the felines.
Yeah. And then we got ads, and then we get back to the two of them getting dressed for the wedding.
And this is an engagement room, and then the Conway bedroom, of course. Holly is helping Catwoman get ready with her
dress.
Now,
you catch that, the Conway bedroom?
Ah, oh, man.
Kevin Conway?
Yes, and that's the thing. It's one of those things, like, you hear
all
it again.
All the name references in here are creators or artists mm-hmm. or people that
and
are involved in the history
Batman
of Batman.
In some way, shape, or
now,
form.
In these, now, what we're seeing with Holly in this, Holly's helping Selina with her dress. Let's see. Here she's not starting anything, but later on she actually slowly starts to put the put some weird doubts into mm-hmm. Selina's head, possibly. But you get
until
Alfred
then.
Dressing Bruce, obviously.
Excuse me.
And Bruce talks about how he looks like his father, and then Alfred says, "Oh, Master Bruce, you most certainly do look like your father."
And now in the next one, this is a art done by Albuquerque, and I really like this. This is when Batman got foiled in Catwoman's trap when he was trying to undercover what was going on with Black Mask, and so was Poison Ivy. I'm sorry, so was Catwoman, but she was there not to to figure out what he was doing that was wrong. She was mm-hmm. trying to figure out what was he doing wrong to make him money so she could steal it. And he got tied up in her trap, and she gives him an upside-down kiss. I thought that was really romantic because between the both of them. And then this other one is done by Kimber and Sinclair.
Kimber and Sinclair.
Now this is a classic Batman and Catwoman right here. Her in her her purple dress and green cape, and then him in his short-ear blue-black cape and cowl, and how they stared at each other's eyes on the rooftop for one of the first times to prove that the master may not be a master at all, and that can go on both sides of both of them. The master of stealing isn't, and neither is the master detective. Now we're in Fox Hall. I was trying to figure if that was out anything, but I don't think it is at all.
Maybe Lucius Fox? I don't know.
Maybe. But it was weird, because like, he's not a real guy. They finally met, and they say they should not meet before you get married, but they did.
They do anyway, yeah.
Maybe this is some bad luck foreshadowing right here. And then next you go on. Now, this is look like from the Long Halloween. This is looking like from the Long Halloween of Sale and Vilbera. Who did the Long Halloween? Now I kind of want to look at that.
I don't know.
Go
and this actually has
the
second one is another, looks like from the same thing, just with this. That was Tim Sale there. This is from Pope and Villarubia. And this is the two of them on the rooftop back and forth. She talks about, or they talk about how she knows why you let them look.
It was Tim Sale that drew that, so they all come back for the runs. Cool.
Well, what's going on in this one is talking about the way he sneaks up on people, the way he scares them, but the cat couldn't be put down.
Also, if this happening after the time of what's happening in Long Halloween, this was starting the whole who is Selina's father and who is this Batman guy.
Mm-hmm.
This was coming into a new time of when everybody was really dying randomly in Gotham, but still they're trying to find out what's going on. She wants to find out what's going on in her father's past, but they still have some time to show a little bit of love to each other.
Yeah.
And as Catwoman said, this would be something that would recur forever.
Yeah, he will always return to the Bat no matter what.
And now this is when she started putting these thoughts in her head. Holly was for Selina. This is an engagement room. You can't believe it's him, the Batman.
It's Englehart room.
Englehart room. Englehart. There you go. And the Conway room for the next one with Batman and because Kevin Conway.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is she's telling him this is insane that this is happening. You're marrying the Batman. This has never been like this. Been like what? Happy. Oh, Batman happy. Wonder how that's gonna go. Basically.
Yeah.
And then
he's like, wait, I thought he saw he needed his misery.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was how he did what he did.
Right, that's why he's Batman.
It's what Holly's telling her. And then this is the first time Selina's like, wait a minute, what?
Right. And
the first time she's thought of this.
Then this is where you see Alfred and Batman. He's on his phone looking up everyone's names. And then this is where Alfred says, would you like me to contact me, Master Dick, Mr. Clark?
They're looking for a witness for Bruce's side.
Right.
Is he a best man?
Right. And he says, no, none of that will do. Since it's been just the two of us from the beginning, I can't think of anyone else I would really want. Then Alfred sits down. They look at each other and hug like father and son.
Yeah.
Now, this was the first time
I met... The only person that Bruce wants at his wedding is Alfred.
Was this the first time we saw them ever have any physical contact like this?
In a
long time? I've seen this in the media, but as far as the comics go, I'd never seen them even show affection of, you know... You're like my father. Now, this is coming into the newer generation of at least the past 8 years, I would say. If anybody remember, in the New 52, there was this scene with Batman, Catwoman on the rooftop that everyone got really giddy and happy about was one of them. Kind of like, finally, yeah, they're showing something. And it's just them on the rooftop showing their affection for each other. And then later on is the double date that we just got in Rebirth last year, when Batman, Catwoman, and Lois Lane and Clark went out, or Superman went out on Night of Town for about a couple of issues. They had that in there, right?
Yeah. And it's still the Catwoman and Batman talking about each other's eyes and how it's awesome to be together. And her describing who he is in her eyes, and he's describing who she is to him.
And then we have O'Neill Avenue. This is happening currently of O'Neill. Mm-hmm.
Remember Denny O'Neill mm-hmm. from the 70s?
Selina and Holly are talking, saying, I wrote him a little letter because I didn't want to finish it because they left out. They're now on the road. Written him since they were in Arkham when we confessed. And then she tells him, I didn't tell him, it was hard to say, but I really tried, and when we're not tired, we're out here, that's what it is. And it says, oh, so you're marrying a healer, of course, Selina, right? Well, after all, what happened? And she's like, well, what kind of do you mean?
Well, yeah, Selina wants to know, am I a hero? Mm-hmm. And Holly tells her, well, you have to be. After everything that's happened, don't you have to be a hero?
Right. And then, once again, now he's discussed the same thing to Alfred about
and
the
we were
letter.
Talking about the creators, asked, the oh, yeah. The Ween Expressway, Len Ween.
And Alfred's telling him, you do love her, and I know you'll be happy. And once again, now this is popping into Batman's head. If you're happy, will you still be Batman?
Yeah.
Now, I never seen this. Is like something pulled out of Batman the Animated Series.
Looks kind of like it, yeah.
This is, who is this? Templeton and Smith?
Templeton and Smith, yes.
Like I said, just like something from out of the Batman animated series, and all, oh, but once again, look me in the eyes and show me the life you want when you were born, your parents died, all that pain. Well, both of them came from pain because as a child, she didn't even have anybody, so at least it was better to know someone than not to have them at all. And this is right from Rebirth when Batwoman and Catwoman went to the desert to see Talia.
Mm-hmm.
And this is done by Jones and Berlanti. Now we are back on the roof of Kane.
Kane Plaza.
We all know. We don't even got to say.
And Finger Tower. Well, Bob Kane and Bill Finger.
And she wrote Batman a letter or left it on his computer in the Batcave. She's on the rooftop crying in sorrow and misery. And then she jumps off of it, kind of death-defying, of course, as Catwoman. And Batman gets there. He's been waiting for an hour. He's been waiting for 4 hours. And he says, we'll wait another one. And there's a cat. That's cute. Then there's a cat. Actually, there's a cat letter on his, and there's a bat one on her laptop. And then
she left the bat letter for the bat.
Okay.
He left one for the cat.
Okay. And then he says, "Perhaps I need to. No, I just need to go." So he jumps off the rooftop too, and now in search for her.
She stood him up on the rooftop.
Mm-hmm. And this is where we see done by Finch and Berlanti, where he proposed to her and says, love always, Calvin did. And that was the letter that she left him, just short and quick. And this is what he left her, with all my love. And this art was with lightning in the background. He pulled her mask off, kissing her. This was done by Lee Williams and St. Clair. This is more pages.
And this is where you see that those two letters we just saw on the pillow is what you've been reading this entire book.
Yes. Bat... Cat, and at the very end of this was the big surprise. And this is an Arkham Asylum. You see Holly walking down. Now, this is my speculation. I think these villains tricked her for Bat and Cat not to get married. And she walks into this room of villains of Riddler, Joker. What's this guy called? The guy that can manipulate your mind. What was he?
I don't remember.
He was the Psycho Pirate.
Yes.
Bane, Gotham Girl, the Ventriloquist, and Scarface, Thomas Wayne's Batman, and Hugo Strange, with Holly kneeling to them, and Bane says, the bat is broken. And the reason why Bane always wants to break the bat, no matter how many times he smashes him over his knee, Batman heals and gets right back to doing what he's doing. But that was his body. Now he can break his heart by having his spirit broken without a Catwoman in his life. What will become of Batman now? So Bane's taking a new approach. I think he set all of them up. The one thing I don't understand, I understand Hugo, Scarface, Gotham Girl, Ventriloquist, Psycho Pirate, Joker, and Riddler, of course. They're from the same era. Yeah. Where the heck did Thomas Wayne come from?
I have no idea.
How did he get here?
I don't know.
What?
Well, and then the very last page is the wedding invitation, and it's got the special guests in it. And this was all of those pages. We've been telling you the last names. Well, they had the Those pages were written or were drawn by Jose Garcia Lopez and Trish Mulvihill. Becky Cloonan had one. Jason Fabok and Brad Anderson. Frank Miller and Alex Sinclair. Lee Bermigio. Neil Adams and Hi-Fi. Tony S. Daniel and Tomeo More. Amanda Connor and Paul Mortz. Rafael Albuquerque. Andy Kubert and Alex Sinclair. Tim Sale and Jose Villarubia. Paul Pope and Jose Villarubia. Mitch Gerards. Clay Mann and Jordy Belair. Ty Templeton and Kieran Smith. Joel Jones and Jordy Belair. David Finch and Jordy Belair. Jim Lee, Scott Williams, and Alex Sinclair. Greg Capullo and Pico Plasciencia. And then Lee Weeks. And this book was edited by Brittany Holzer. And associate editor by Brittany Holzer. And editor was James Rich. The actual book was written, because this was such a special one, it's written by Tom King. Art and cover done by Mikhail Janine. Colorist was June Chung. Letterer was Clayton Cowles. Variant covers were Jim Lee, Alex Williams, and Alex Sinclair, and Arthur Adams and Alejandro Sanchez. And that was the wedding album for Bat and the Cat that actually didn't happen.
Yep, and there was some controversy. Some people like, good, he shouldn't be married. And other people like me, I'm like, I would like to see how that would have
worked. That
would
have been interesting.
Yeah, it would have been interesting. So.
But now there's a question, is Bat going to go darker than we have recently seen? Is he not going to go dark? How's this going to work?
Right. I don't know. As I said, this is all a plan from Bane, and this all happened back in early Rebirth. I forget what that was called, though. Oh, man.
I forget the name of the story, but yeah.
But this was all
where Bane was still trying to break the Bat.
And this is literally a continuation, which I thought it all came around in a circle perfect. Rebirth has been amazing recently. Now, do you want to start with...
Let's go to Justice League number 3 now. So that we go from the Batman Wedding Album to the Justice League and the Ultraviolet Spectrum.
Now, we're going to go through this one probably pretty
quick. Yeah, we're going to go the next two... this one really quick because we got to go a little bit into the next one. But we start with Sinestro. In the past, on a planet.
Yes, now this was basically the quick origins of Sinestro, how he got his ring. And it's funny because the same way he got his ring was the same way really Hal got his with a plane crash.
Yeah. Well, he was an intergalactic anthropologist investigating this world, and he finds a reference to something called Umbrax. Now, he's finding out there's this power on this world that he has to figure out how to lock away, because this is a power that can destroy the universe, and then a green light finds him.
Right, so this stopped him at the time, that we think, at least. And now we get back to the present day with Jon Stewart attacking the Flash.
At this point an Ultraviolet Lantern.
Yes, attacking Wonder Woman, Flash, and Cyborg, and Aquaman. And the thing about this is, it's pure, raw emotion. And the thing that's getting to all of them, really, is the cruelty. This is a powder of cruel light. So this is something different in the spectrum. This is something new we've never seen.
None of them can even touch John. He takes down basically everybody there.
Now,
Flash, Wonder Woman, and Aquaman.
Now, how to be cruel is a human emotion, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Now, any other inanimate object cannot feel this raw, cruel pain.
Yeah.
So this is when we get Cyborg says, I can take you
nowhere.
Out. Because it doesn't hurt me, because I'm part machine. And even John says, I'll rip it out of you because you still have enough man in you. And he says, well, I got enough machine in me to take you out or knock you out for the time being, which he does. So there's benefits to being half man, half machine.
Yeah. But then,
excuse me. And then this is now where you see Superman and Martian Manhunter fighting these creatures that were once lizards and vultures,
but
now
have been
changed.
We get to inside the totality.
By the totality. That's why they don't look the same.
Everything's being mutated, which is why I remember that we have Batman and
Hawkgirl
inside of Superman and Hawkman, or Martian Manhunter,
yeah.
Trying to stop the mutagens from destroying them from the inside.
But their suits are now breaking apart, too, so this is not good either.
But we also see, remember that Lex Luthor is inside of Superman also.
Jumping ahead a little bit on me.
Well, it's all right there.
It is.
Lex Luthor's right there.
Yeah, he is right on the next page.
But now we're inside Superman, inside Martian Manhunter, and they're actually doing really good because they're fighting off all these little bacterias and enzymes and whatever. But as Ken said, we can't forget that Lex is in there. And it's getting really good. But now we wake back up at the, or John Stewart at the Hall of Justice, he wakes
meanwhile,
back up.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice.
We have to do that. That's never going to get old. Every time. Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice, John Stewart is waking up, and Mr. Terrific was the doctor on him.
Yeah,
I love
Mr.
how we're
Terrific,
seeing these different characters in these Justice League.
Mr.
Like,
Terrific and Cyborg are working perfect. On him. Aquaman, Flash, and Wonder Woman are still there.
Mm-hmm.
And they all want to know what in the world happened. What is going on here?
And then John wakes up to see all this, and he says he's actually seen something like this before when he went on a trip with mission with Martian Manhunter years ago.
Which is interesting. You see the way he puts this, though. You weren't here, Barry, but years ago. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking this is when Barry was dead.
This is calling back from the old Justice League.
Sometime in the 90s,
when
probably.
When Wally West took over.
Or the early 2000s.
John Stewart had to step in.
Yeah. And John says he battled with the Justice League against the Anti-Life.
Because Martian Manhunter was still a part of that team at the time, right?
Well, he battled against Anti-Life on a planet called Zanchi. And he had actually, John Jones was with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he got, was slowed down by fire, or something, it says here. So John moved ahead thinking that, well, I can take care of this. And by doing that, the whole planet he says, I was rash, I rushed in, and the planet died. It was my fault, millions of lives gone. Which sounds kind of like where we got Parallax originally.
Yes.
Because
Hal Jordan
couldn't deal with the destruction of Coast City, so he decided to take all the power so that he could rebuild it.
And I'm wondering this is why he's wearing the cruelty ring, because he felt like he did something really cruel. Which he did, but he didn't do it intentionally.
Yeah.
But if you can feed off those emotions.
Well, at this point, John is, he's searched and searched for some way to bring back Zanshi. And he found a book describing a spectrum beyond the one that we know. Now, John Stewart does talk about earlier that, the invisible spectrum is what had a hold of him. And while, we control the emotional spectrum through rings and such, the invisible spectrum actually controls you. You don't have a choice in here. You have no free will once you become one of the invisible lanterns. But we find that he's found this book when he's trying to find Zanshi, and it was one man's mission to make sure that that this invisible spectrum was never unlocked. You find out it was Sinestro's book.
Yes.
And he described something very terrifying. It's this spectrum, it's... Heart is a living phantom galaxy powered by a sentient black sun called Umbrax.
And Umbrax is an unseen space dawn and separates... What is that?
It's unseen through space.
And it separates people from places and the things with them, with the energy, into the galaxy. And there's no stopping it once it's locked onto a planet.
It chooses planets by choosing ones that are the... where self-destructive forces are strongest, usually primitive outliers.
And John Stewart Green Lantern pulls up on his ring the same symbols that he saw back when he was on that planet and shows them to
the rest
of
the team. It looks very similar to the symbols that they've been that Luthor had in the Hall of Doom.
All of these look...
And the like doorknob from the Hall of Justice earlier.
Mm-hmm. And then after all this is being said, Sinestro...
Well, hang on. Before we get to where you go into that, we're there next?
Right here.
Okay, but before that, now Sinestro wrote that the invisible spectrum was tied to six other hidden forces in the universe, which that is tying into Flash War right now. Because remember, in Flash War, we were dealing with the Speed Force we've had, but we now have the Sage Force and the Strength Force.
And Steel Force.
No, there was Sage and what was the Wisdom Force?
Oh,
no,
yeah.
There's another one. It's the Sage Force. Yeah, there's two new ones.
Right.
Sage Force and was it... It's not Steel Force.
No. This is showing the Steel Force, though.
No, the Steel Force.
Or Steel Force.
Remember he had talked about the Turtle? Supposedly said that there's something called the Steel Force?
Yeah. This is what I was getting to right here.
Yeah, that's coming, too. So there's six other hidden forces in the galaxy. Well, we know one of those is Speed, one's Sage, one's the other one in Flash War.
Right.
That's three of them. The Steel Force is the fourth one.
Right. And this is where Barry says, you know what, I'm going to find that, because he's been trying to figure out what's going on with my Speed Force right now. And he's triangulating where this is coming from. He gets his rude Speedy talk going on. And then Aquaman says, wait, this was in the ocean? How can the ocean be here for all this toxic life? and they're now all heading to see where this is coming from.
It's triangulating into a section of ocean that nothing can live in, and Aquaman knows this.
And now we get back to with Superman and Martian Manhunter. And
back in the singular, or the, what do they call that again? The,
Chaos.
No.
It is totality. Chaos. Totality. And then they get there. John is looking very happy. Like, he's just like, oh, this stuff is going on. And he's like, my God. There's an ad. And now.
And, we see that, Hawkgirl and, Batman are fighting off the mutagens, and it's getting easier.
Mm-hmm. Now we see, Martian Manhunter talking to a human boy through, like, this barricade. And once he goes back to reality, what we can see...
Wait, you skipped a page.
That's why I'm like, something's off here.
Well, we find...
There we go.
In the center of the totality so far, they find this giant wall with these carved statues on it. And
the source wall.
John talks about they look like the giants that are trapped on the source wall. And we've never fully understood what they are, who they are. He says he senses life in them. Superman tells him, just watch out, we're not sure what this is. And then John is going to check it all out. He can't...
he can't sense anything in there.
He can't tell what's going on, but this is what the totality requires from them. He needs a leap of faith,
And the face looks so familiar from Hawk Girl, and she might have seen these faces before because she's lived so many lives, we don't know. And Martian Manhunter says, we can't do this right now. This is what requires a leap of faith. And then
he reaches out with his mind to find out what it is inside here.
I thought it was funny because Lex Luthor's like, oh, don't stop now, Martian. Don't slow down. Just do it. And she says, I know what I have to do, Cal. And once he does, he basically touches the wall, and he sees and he receives something entirely and then that stops him. It wakes up. And they're telling him to get away from it. And then this is where he says, the first abomination must be destroyed. And that's, I guess, Martian Manhunter, the big rock thing that tells him that in the totality. And then Lex says, it's too late for both of you aliens. Now we go back to the rest of the Justice League. We're under sea.
I didn't know the Invisible Jet could go underwater.
That's what I was just looking at. The Invisible Jet is underwater. Aquaman, of course, can swim underwater. Martian Manhunter and Cyborg can take care of themselves.
It's not just the way they draw it. You actually can see the people inside of it. The jet is the only thing invisible.
Right.
Because she talks about that in here. And Flash talks about how maybe I'll just stay in the invisible jet and so that no one can find me. And then Wonder Woman tells him that's not the way it works.
Yeah.
They can still see you.
And then this is
the Hall of Doom.
Hall of Doom. And this is where the whole Steel Force is coming from.
Mm-hmm. Steel Force. Like, not moving.
I have a speech impediment. and then we go under here, and we see the white Martians.
Yeah, kind of. So they've gotten into the Hall of Doom not knowing what it is.
And this is some ugly things flash as they look pickled, and they pop out, and they start attacking.
These are ancient white Martians is what they look like.
But how did they get there? How did the Hall of Doom have this?
It says that, because Flash says here, they the facial structure is more primitive than the ones that they've all seen before. It's more animalistic.
Mm-hmm.
So these are ancient white Martians.
And now these creatures now are attacking...
The giants.
The giants. I was going to say the Titans, but we just dealt with them. Are attacking Martian Manhunter and Superman, which will also be attacking Lex Luthor, Hawkgirl, and Batman. And then this is also another person that came into play. Lex Luthor... Now, Lex Luthor is smart. I love him because, like, okay, Lex Luthor was a stowaway in Batman's body.
Yeah, in Superman's body.
Superman's body with Batman not knowing this. And Hawkgirl is just in Martian Manhunter's alone? Mm-mm.
Well, we see in the back of her capsule behind her is the Joker.
Another stowaway.
Like, chainsaw, looks like.
Yep, and saying, shh. Oh, that was creepy. It's very creepy. It's weird he didn't go in there with Batman. They know each other too well. Maybe.
I don't know.
And now we get back here on with the moon where the watchtower is, and this is...
Now, remember, the moon was destroyed 2 issues ago when the totality first showed up, wasn't it?
Right, and it was because Batman had something rigged there that he didn't tell anyone because he's Batman. and it's funny that we got a... I didn't even realize this until Kim brought this up. There is another character that's being mentioned in the Justice League once again, which is Geo-Force.
Well, we find out that the moon being destroyed, we know that it affects gravity on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
It affects our tides and things like that. Well, it says... as John Stewart and Cyborg are heading to the moon, to what's left of the watchtower up there, they talk about how You can't believe that the moon is really gone. How long do you think Geoforce can hold off the tides, keep gravity intact? So Geoforce right now is trying to hold the work, basically do what the moon was doing.
And to let you guys know who Geoforce is, if it's not ringing the bell, that's Terra's older brother. More stable controlling of his powers, yeah. Older brother. And he was on the Outsiders along with Black Lightning, Katana, Metamorpho, is Batman's Outsiders when they first create the Outsiders. So they're still using him.
Yeah.
And they're seeing some unseen things right now, and something's coming for them on the moon. And
yeah.
It's Sinestro. And because of what he did to Jon Stewart, it's happening again, and he's trying to control him again with all this chaos of... cruelty coming back, and now at least we have Cyborg with him, because we know Cyborg can take Jon Stewart down, but how long can he fend himself off till something bad happens?
Yeah.
And this
but
is,
we find out, it's like, they know Sinestro tried to stop this from happening before. Why is he actually helping it happen now, they're trying to figure out. And what it is Sinestro wasn't going to set this force free. But when he actually did finally find Umbrax, he found that Umbrax had already slipped away from the bonds broken that were broken by the activation of the Still Force, which was activated because of the break in the Source Wall.
Mm-hmm.
So he was prepared to track it to some primitive system and lock it away again until he saw where it actually had gone. They find out, where did it go? Well, remember, it has to go someplace... where was it? It's drawn to worlds with the darkest, most self-destructive energy, which of course means it's already chosen Earth.
Mm-hmm. So next one is the solar system ain't too big enough for the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
We'll find out what that means in the next issue.
Yeah,
but Justice League's been going good so far. I'm liking
yeah, it's
this.
Interesting. It's a very interesting story.
You're very happy with this.
And the
now,
last one we
last
have
one.
For today.
Is Man of Steel issue number 6.
The finale of Man of Steel.
Yep, 6 of 6. The fate of Lois and John are revealed in here.
And this is interesting because it's not what I was expecting for Man of Steel.
I was
when I thought Man of Steel, I thought they were going to actually redo Superman's origins or something.
I didn't know where the heck they were going with this whole story.
Well, we start off with Clark, Lois, and Jor-El arguing about John again, and John going with Jor-El. And you get... where is it? And they're he's just a kid. He can't do all these things. He's innocent. And John asks straight up, then, why do I grow up to kill millions of people?
Yep, and they're like, what are you talking about? And if you remember back early last year or mid last year, Jonathan was trying to join the Titans, and then we had the Titans for my love came back of the future or a different reality.
Well, yeah, because we had the future Batman, which was
Tim Drake. We had the
came
future
back
Superman,
to kill Jonathan,
which was Connor Kent. Well, that's the weird thing. If he came back and he was the Superman of that future, and John wasn't, it was kind of weird. Then we had Cassie and Bart Allen return as the Flash and Wonder Woman.
Well,
there.
We find that the reason that they we know back then that supposedly some point in the future, John loses control of his solar flare
and
sets
and kills
off
a lot of people.
Yeah, kills millions of people. And but these guys were from, and it even says here they were an alternate future.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, I think that was from the future.
Like another world from the multiverse.
I was thinking it was from the future before the New 52 happened.
Yeah.
At the time. And now he says, don't worry. Superman always says, don't worry about the future, worry about the now. And when the future does get here, you're still living in now and you'll know how to control it. But
and you're not, and it tells him straight up, you're not that boy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, because at this point, everybody here knows about the multiverse.
Right.
And knows
like,
there's hundreds of different incarnations.
And he's like,
each
that came
people.
From that multiverse or that. Do you think that this version of you will do that? He doesn't know. All John can think about is now the Titans didn't even want me. He's like, what about the Titans? He said, the Titans didn't want me because they knew I was a threat. They knew something was wrong with me. And so what's wrong with me, Mom? What's wrong with me, Dad? And Jor-El just looks on as, I can help this kid.
Yeah.
and now we go back to now.
And it is Rogarzal and Superman fighting in the Earth's core. Mm-hmm. And Rogarzal has a device in the core that's supposedly going to destroy the world.
Just as it did Krypton.
Well, yeah. To get rid of the Kryptonians that are on Earth, you destroy the whole planet.
Right.
That's just the way you do things.
To him, at least. And they're talking back and forth. He says, what does that symbol on your staff mean? And he said, it doesn't matter because you'll be dead soon anyway. And he's asking him, where is he from? And he was trying to get down to the bottom of this. And he said, did research what Superman means on Earth in his language? Then you must really be a fool because with all this, the century, Superman says, won't even get me. And Rosar's like, I'm sorry. And then Superman, you know, gives him the speech of, no matter what happens, he's going to win this because he always, you know, fight through any problem. And then they go at, Superman gives him a little smirk. He throws him right back into the other side of this, in the middle of the center of Earth.
Then Superman grabs the device and flies it out into space.
And now as he's flying into space, he's going back in his head thinking about what happened with that knife, his family. And John's still trying to figure out what's wrong with him. Maybe it was an accident. That grandpa basically already said that he shouldn't be created like he did from their genes. And maybe now that's why, because he's accident that happens to him when he becomes Superman and kills everybody. And because he didn't listen to other people now, maybe that's what's wrong with him. And maybe he can fix it now. He won't have a problem in the future.
Yeah.
And Lois says, well, is there a solution? Jor-El says, maybe if we can find him throughout the galaxy, we can find something. Because that's what the House of El can do. And they don't want to go. And he says, well, I'm going anyway. And he says, you know what? Jor-El's like, well, you all can come. He doesn't just have to go. You're invited, too. They're all like, no, no. And Jonathan's like, yes! No, yes! But Lois says she has a job.
I have a job. Mm-hmm. We can't just leave.
Now we go back to the present, and they say how they'll talk about it later, and just an FYI about their group, and you always have someone to talk to. Then I know where Rogozar comes back, knocks Superman out, looks like, and now he's thinking back to the past again. And
yeah, says, trying to get the device back so he can go back and destroy the world again.
And Lois says she's going to call her lawyer, and I'm sorry.
And Superman's like, wait a minute, why are you calling your lawyer? What's he going to do about
this? That's all I thought about, like, She says, well, I just need to do this because she's basically going to leave with Jonathan. So she has to figure out everything since she's gone.
Yeah, you find out she has to call a lawyer because her lawyer just helped her close a 2-book deal with a new publisher.
Yep.
One of them is about her time at the Daily Planet. And the other one, she's going to get checked out that can I actually write it about this trip?
Right. So now Superman's really – I'm sorry, it's the first time I've seen Superman pissed off. He's yelling, screaming like, everybody just stop it. Because, like, what is going on right now? And then he wakes back up, and you see Rogozar, and this is just going back and forth in these panels. Basically, he's flying in the air with Lois and Jonathan, talking about what is he going to do when they're both gone, stuff like this never thought would happen, and he's still trying to fight Rogozar, and just going back and forth about the choices he made about them was to keep the world safe and also keep his family safe, but how can he keep his family safe if they're gone? But she's saying it's okay because we're going to be with your father, and he's like, he's not really a good father or grandfather.
Yeah.
Then we're still fighting back up in space, and then Supergirl comes out of nowhere, and
she's holding something,
which
we will find out in a minute what that is.
They're basically double-teaming him right now to defeat him. Now we go back to what happened in the past a couple days ago or weeks ago, and Jonathan's whole thing, I'm just going to get through Jonathan's thing right here. He's not paying attention to what the adults are saying. He's just like, oh, I got to get this, I got to get that, and there's something in my drawer. No one touch my third drawer. Don't tell Damien to not touch it if he comes up. You know what? I'll be back. Okay. Third drawer problem is fixed. No one go in there.
Yeah, the third drawer problem situation is taken care of. Don't worry about it.
I have no idea what was in that kid's drawer. But we get
Do you really want to know what's in Superboy's drawers?
I don't. I really don't. I'm good. now we hit Zor-El and Clark talking to each other, saying, you came here, and now my family's in shambles, and now I got a problem in my house. And he's like, from what I'm seeing, there's always been a problem in your house. I'm just here, and it's being proven now. Yeah. And now you can even see that. So is your family. It's always been in disarray.
And Jor-El does give Superman a deep space transmitter, or communicator, that's attached to Jor-El's ship directly.
Mm-hmm. Which Superman, by the way, has on him right now while he's in space with Rogozar.
Nope, because they reference it here in just a minute.
I thought that... Okay, I got that wrong. All right, I'll wait till it comes there. And then Superman is just punching him. We're going back and forth for the past, and now we're going to the present.
Well, you get...
If you want to help me out a little bit, because there's three different
conversations happening
right now.
It's the same argument that Jor-El and Superman had have had since Jor-El came back, and that's that Superman is basically just putting a Band-Aid on the problem around on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
The Earth doesn't want to save itself, it's a waste for him to stay there.
Right.
And because he says, Clark tells him, I can raise my boy, my boy father, and Jor-El tells him to do what? Put out fires in his baby clothes? And Superman tells him straight up, that's not what I do.
Yeah. He's a symbol of hope.
Uh-huh.
Now,
then they're still fighting back and forth about how you sent me to Earth, this Earth, but and Jor-El tells him, but is it all it can be? Are you doing all you can for it? I know you do so much for these people. You are a beacon of hope, but this is just the beginning of what you're capable of. Both you and your son, I know that deeply as anything. And then you go back to the battle in space between Superman, Rogozar, and Wonder Woman, and you find out, or not Wonder Woman, Supergirl, but Supergirl
has a device.
Has a device that fires up, and all of a sudden, you find out it's the Phantom Zone generator.
Mm-hmm.
And they banish Rogozar to the Phantom Zone, and Hal Jordan shows up to actually collect the device that was going to destroy the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing left is Rogozar's axe with that weird symbol on it.
And it's been hard to figure out what the heck does this thing mean.
Uh-huh.
And now we get Lois and Clark back at home.
And Lois, the first thing she says is, Perry took it well? I think he fired me, is what she says. You find out that they're getting ready to leave, and Superman gives her one of his suits and tells her that it'll help protect you when you're in space because it's Kryptonian fabric and stuff. And if you touch the inside of a button on the inside of the belt, it'll actually size itself to you.
Mm-hmm. It'll fix you up right then
and
there.
And talk about how basically how much he's going to miss her and his family.
Yeah.
Then you get Rogozar. This is an interesting part here because you get Rogozar flying through the Phantom Zone, and Superman is still not happy about this.
Yeah,
but it is the only situation. He doesn't like the Phantom Zone because he realizes the Phantom Zone is not a solution to the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who go in there usually come out worse than they went in.
The Supergirl has this conversation with him, like, you know what, screw him anyway. He doesn't deserve it. But
they're sitting there talking about this at the, remains of the fortress with the Justice League there. And they're both, Superman and Supergirl are using their heat vision on something. Then you see what this is. Really, they're talking about that, but this is really the funeral for Kandor.
Mm-hmm.
All the pieces of Kandor have been put into bottles and are being launched into space. Then we get to the goodbye scene from, of Lois and John with, Clark. Or actually, wait a minute. Let me see back here. Is this where... Let's see. Yeah, and it says here. Flip one page back, or two pages back, right there. It says that he can't even call Lois and John.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Because the deep space communicator was broken in the fortress battle.
It was a fortress battle. Okay, I thought it was
so they're out there
okay,
running around, and he has no way of getting a hold of them.
Gotcha.
And I believe that's where... she says straight up during this also that...
She's leaving,
She's
too.
Leaving the Earth because... if there's any chance that Rogozar did this, they need to know who he is, where he came from.
So they're both
if he destroyed Krypton, how did he do that?
Mm-hmm.
So she's going to go traveling looking for that, which is the continuation of the Supergirl series. It comes in August, and she will be traveling through the space trying to figure this stuff out.
Now we go back to the past a little bit further, or back to before his family left.
Yeah,
and they're saying their goodbyes with all this, and the ship it has a transport. They get their own room. Everything seems to be going fine, but Clark just has this weird suspicion. So do I, as a reader. He says, he hugs them all and says, I love you, just hurry back home. And Clark and Zor-El give each other evil stake out of each other. He says, we'll be back home before you know, we really will, and don't let Perry get to the bottom of this, bottom office drawer. And they say they love each other, and then they're gone. Then he goes back to his son's room. He cuddles with his son's little dinosaur.
Then we
and now
we're
in the firehouse of Metropolis. Yes, final page.
And this is the only page that deals with the fire storyline we've had.
Mm-hmm. And I forget her name. It's the redhead female.
Deputy Chief.
Deputy Chief. What is her? Whatever. The Deputy Chief of the Fires Department right now. This kid comes up to her, says, I know who's been starting all those fires. I saw it on TV.
I know you're looking for who started all the fires. Well, I saw it happen.
And then she says, what's up, kid? How do you know who it is? And he said, it's Superman. I saw him. I don't know I don't know why he did it. I thought he was doing it for a good reason, but on TV they said, no, I saw him.
So, to be continued in Superman number 1 and Action number 1001, one of them is, Superman, why did he start fires, according to this? So, and this is going to be a little bit long episode, obviously, because there was a lot of Comic-Con to talk about.
Yeah, there was, and we went pretty deep in on the first in book.
Yeah, that's our reviews for this week. But, so, even though we're running a little long, we still have one thing left to do. And that sound can only mean one thing. This week, like every week, it is time for our weekly comic shop pull list.
Mm-hmm.
This week it's for July 28th, or not 28th, July 18th, 2018.
There you go.
And this week, like every week, the comic shop pull list is brought to you by the Shazbots. That was their song, The Comic Book Shop. Check them out on iTunes and Facebook, or go to www.shazbots.com. Let them know that the DC Superpowers podcast sent you. Well, this week we have 8 books coming for the main line of DC Comics, and then I actually have one honorable mention because I was all excited I saw this was coming.
I forgot we were talking about this, and it popped up the orders before we knew it.
So you want to start with the first one, or you want me to?
You go ahead.
Okay, well, we're starting with Aquaman number 38. Behold King Wrath, wielder of the abyssal dark magic and destined to conquer all of Atlantis. What power exists to turn the tide? Aquaman's trident? Scuttled. The armies of Atlantis? Circling the drain. It's all on Aquaman, or is it? What allies will rally to the Sea King's side in this epic conclusion of the King Wrath saga? The final battle is joined. Art is done by Riccardo Federici and is written by Dan Abnett.
And this next one here is Batman issue number 51. The honeymoon is over for Bruce Wayne as Gotham City's most prominent citizen gets selected for jury duty. That's weird.
Uh-huh.
And the sealing court case involving Mr. Freeze. Freeze claims that the charges should be dismissed because Batman used excessive force. Cue the outrage of the media circus. While doing his civil duty, Wayne is forced to take a hard look at the Dark Knight's methods. And hey, what is Dick Grayson doing running around the city dressed as Batman? Art done by Lee Weeks and written by Tom King. Well, of course it's going to last a long time, so
yeah.
Someone's got to protect Gotham.
Well, next up, we get Batwoman number 17. Kate Kane's last assignment is leaving her cold. It's a cold case that forces her to team up with GCPD's Detective Renee Montoya, and which, as usual, has Gotham City running out of time. Is this the start of a beautiful crime-fighting partnership? No spoilers, but expect sparks and punches to fly. Art is done by Fernando Blanco and is written by Marguerite Bennett. Now, weren't the two of them a couple at one point?
Mm-hmm. I thought so. Well, we can Google if you want to.
Yeah, at the moment, not going to Google it, but I thought they were. No. It was Kate Kane and Maggie Sawyer, I believe. She was dating one of the cops.
Okay. Well, we'll do some research on that.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Well, Cyborg issue number 24 is...
Now, this is interesting because we got news that Cyborg was canceled with issue number 23. So,
right.
I don't know why this is still on here. I don't know if this is actually coming out or not.
Coming out later, too.
So, I don't know if they've just not changed it or...
August 1st.
Maybe they changed their mind. I don't know.
And we'll get our news and we'll let you guys know. Now, I'm trying to pronounce this guy's name.
Najiro Jin.
Okay. Always hated his weak and easily injured human body, but does Vic Stone offer the final ingredient he needs to transfer himself into digital life? Against a foe with a power to transfer from body to body and take control of entire military, Cyborg must delete the new threat to or face being controlled himself. Art's done by Tom Denrick and written by Marv Wolfman. I don't know
what's going on. We will find out if it comes out tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, next up, we get Damage number 7. Ethan Avery is Damaged, the monstrous brute with unlimited strength for an hour. That's the semi-good news. The bad? Ethan's on the run from the army that's transformed him. Mr. Leash's metahuman tactical squad is hot on Avery's trail. What could go wrong when a bunch of bloodthirsty super soldiers take on a rampaging monstrosity called Damage? Plus, what is Colonel Jonas's gut-wrenching reason for running the top-secret superhuman chop shop? Secrets are revealed in part one of the new story, Scuttled. Art is done by Trevor Scott and Diogenes Neves, and is written by Robert Venditti.
The next one is Green Lantern's issue number 51. A murder stands within the Green Lantern Corps ranks as tension raises between Jessica and Simon. Their rings seem to say. Other commented to the.
Yeah, the other committed to the crime.
Art's done by Mike Perkins and written by Dan Jurgens.
Now this is interesting because if you read the anniversary issue of Green Lantern's number 50, all the rings are acting very strange and telling them strange things. John Stewart got in trouble. He told the ring to call out for help, and it told him no.
Like they have
and it sent an all clear out to the rest of the Corps.
You know what's going on because there's two lands at the time. That's what's doing.
I don't know. Well, the next book is the New Challengers, number 3. It's the new Challengers versus the old Challengers. The original Challengers infiltrate Challengers Mountain to uncover the identity of the professor who's been manipulating both teams. As Dark Matter leaps from the Dark Multiverse, the new Challengers travel to the prehistoric underworld of Skartaris, stomping grounds of Travis Morgan, the Warlord. That's cool to see him back. He was actually just in the books a couple of months ago on... Which title was it? One of the titles he was in... No. He was in with someone.
I thought it was a Brave and Bold. With Batman.
No. That's... they're in Tir na n'og, which is the Celtic version.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
I don't remember exactly, but... this art is done by Klaus Janson and Andy Kubert, and it's written by Aaron Gillespie and Scott Snyder.
And, the next one
is the Justice honorable League. Mention. Wait, I didn't even know this was coming.
Hold on, wait. One more before we get there.
How did I miss that one?
I got one more before we get to the honorable mention.
Okay. That's good. That means I get the honorable mention.
Justice League issue number 4. Everything works out, right?
Yeah.
What is hidden in the darkest depths of the ocean and farthest reaches of space doesn't even compare to the insidious secrets buried in the past of The Flash, Green Lantern, and Martian Manhunter. That's interesting. They're kind of giving a little something away. While the rest of the League battles to save their friends before all the reality unravels, the citizens of Earth must make startling decision to join the Legion of Doom. Art is done by George Jimenez and written by Scott Snyder. Scott, you've been doing great, man. This has been my favorite Justice League run in years. Keep it up.
Well, like I was trying to say before, we have one honorable mention because I'm excited this book is coming. We have Injustice, which I've never really read much Injustice.
They've been amazing books, and they're still making them because they are really just a different twist on everything, and we need some of the strong Superman.
They're crossing over with a book I have been reading, everything I can find from it, which is it's Injustice versus Masters of the Universe, number 1. Believing He-Man and the Masters of the Universe defeated, a robotic imposter has seized control of Eternia, but not for long. After freeing his kingdom from this strongman's rule, Prince Adam learns not everyone is pleased to see the pretender deposed. But Adam knows the value of freedom. So when heroes from another dimension ask his aid in deposing a superhero-turned-dictator, he agrees. Teaming up with Batman against the Superman of the Injustice Universe, He-Man and his new allies face dangerous and familiar enemies in a battle where no world is safe. Art is done by Freddie E. Williams and is written by Tim Seeley. This is going to be awesome because everything DC has been doing with Masters of the Universe recently in the last 10 years has been awesome.
Yeah.
And that brings us to the end of an episode finally.
We did it.
We've not had one this long in a while. This isn't our longest episode, but we've
gotten pretty far in the past couple months.
but like I said, that brings us to the end here. And, Super Friends, we're going to keep an eye on Comic-Con.
Yeah, for sure.
There is some awesome stuff coming. But let us know, what are you looking forward to at Comic-Con? What did you think of the Batman Wedding album? Or what did you think of Man of Steel? Personally, I like Man of Steel, the 6-issue run, better than I did with what we got with
Batman Wedding.
Batman Wedding.
Oh, yeah, I did too.
But, It's interesting to see what's going to come after the wedding.
Yeah, it is. But I'm really looking forward to this Justice League. I've been a big fan. This right here has got me back to watching the old Justice League cartoons. Like,
yeah.
I really love this issue. The Man of Steel was probably the favorite miniseries run I've read in probably a year, to be honest. That was really good.
Well, what did you think of what we talked about tonight and what's coming in the future for DC? And what did you see at Comic-Con?
Yeah.
Let us know. Vern, how can they get a hold of us?
Guys, you can get a hold of us. First, you can get a hold of us at DCSuperpowers.com. As we say, you can find our sponsor page, our YouTube page, our clothing page, our gear page. You can find everything on there. You can find our links to our social media, which I'm about to give you right now. Our YouTube page is, of course, DC Superpowers Podcast. We are DC Superpowers Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, and on Twitter we are at SuperpowersDC. My personal uses, you can find me, Hollin' That Wolf on Instagram, I'm VYellow on Twitter, and I am Vernon McWayne Moore on my Facebook page.
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at GW1Ken. On Facebook, I'm just Ken Rose. I also want to give a shout out to all of our new friends on Twitter. We've had a lot of people following us. Thank you guys.
Thank you, awesome. Thank you.
But another thing you guys could do to help, head over to iTunes and drop a rating and review. Let us know what you think of the show. It only takes you a couple of minutes, and it allows other people to find the show easier.
Especially if you have an iPhone, because I said, I have an iPhone, and it comes with the podcast app already installed. Just type us in. If you're not following us already, just scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page. That's where you can leave a 5-star review. Really easy.
Exactly. But you can also email the show, DCSuperpowersPodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on our network homes at the Tangentbound Network, tangentboundnetwork.com, and WeebieGeeks at WeebieGeeksPC.com. And then, like I said, keep an eye on Comic-Con. We're going to watch Comic-Con, and we'll let you guys know what's going on next week. For that, Vernon, thanks for hanging out with me, brother.
Always fun. Always a good time.
We'll see you next week. And Super Friends, we'll see you next week.
Take care, everybody.